They interview nationally known writers, winemakers, chefs, restaurateurs, brewers, and others that make our world so delicious. Join me and my guests every Saturday from 1 to 3 p.m. for tasty news shows, or visit the Tasty Planet on the web by going to www.tastyplanet.org. Listen in and have a good appetite.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News. I'm Harley Carnes. Now the warning is about more than just spinach in bags. All fresh spinach is coming down all across the country because of the E. coli contamination in bag spinach.
The FDA issued an advisory to consumers not to eat spinach, and the entire fresh produce chain has worked cooperative to remove spinach from store shelves.
CBS's Wyatt Andrews says the outbreak began nearly 3 weeks ago.
The FDA has issued this national warning because this is a particularly nasty outbreak. They have identified the E. coli in question as the potentially fatal kind, O157H7. It's especially risky to the elderly and to children under 5 years old. They know that 50 people have been made sick, more probably now. 8 people have kidney failure, and 1 has died.
There are plenty of options for something to eat, of course.
Green leaf, romaine, watercress. We want to make sure our customers are safe until they find the source where the E. coli is coming from.
That's Jim Poulos. He runs a diner in Manhattan. Republican Congressman Ohio's Bob Ney is going to prison.
In a statement, Ney said he's deeply sorry for what he has done and suggests a previously undisclosed addiction to alcohol played a role. In his plea bargain, he admits taking free trips, sports tickets, and restaurant meals from lobbyist Jack Abramoff and doing him favors in Congress in return. He also admitted taking thousands of dollars in cash and gambling chips from a foreign businessman in London and used one of his staffers to help smuggle the cash through customs. He could face up to 10 years in prison, but prosecutors say they'll recommend 2 years and 3 months behind bars.
That's CBS's Bob Fuss on Capitol Hill. When former Secretary of State and Joint Chiefs Chairman Colin Powell wrote a very public letter saying the U.S. might be losing its moral authority for war in Iraq over the CIA interrogation program, President Bush saw red.
If there's any comparison between the compassion and decency of the American people and the terrorist tactics of extremists, it's flawed logic.
The debate over that program and how much of it should continue still rages on the Hill. 10,000 salaried jobs are going right out the exhaust pipe at Ford, in addition to the buyout offer.
It is now clear that we were too optimistic in January about our ability to stabilize our market share, given the quicker-than-expected shifts in the marketplace.
That's Ford Executive Vice President Mark Fields. Two more plants will also be shut down as Ford restructures and retrenches. Faculty and staff went back to work today at Dawson College in Montreal, Canada, 2 days after a man in his 20s invaded the school and shot 20 people, killing one young woman and then later himself. The school is preparing to resume classes on Tuesday. On Wall Street, the Dow up about 33 points today to close at nearly 11,561. The Nasdaq gained nearly 7 points. Oil prices, $63.33 a barrel, up 11 cents. This is CBS News.
Hi, I'm Sterling Marley, driver of number 14 Waste Management Chevrolet. You know I can't go anywhere without supporting my pit crew.
Step on it, Sterling. Only got 30 seconds.
That's my crew. Always keeps me on track. So as I was saying, my team at Waste Management has great job opportunities for drivers, mechanics, and technicians.
Go, go, go!
All right. Call Waste Management at 877-220-JOBS to learn more.
From everyday collection to environmental protection, think green. Think Waste Management. Call 877-220-JOBS today.
Honey, what color should we paint the bedroom?
Nah, sweetie, I don't care.
Okay, then pink it is.
Pink? Now I care.
It's the fall color sale going on now at your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Stop in and save 20% on a wide variety of high-quality Sherwin-Williams paints and stains. Plus, get free shipping on custom order wallpaper, too. For painting and decorating,
ask Sherwin-Williams.
For a store near you, visit SherwinWilliams.com.
The Pope's comments on violent Islamics should not be taken to mean that Islam is violent. That from Father David Hollenbeck at Boston College.
The Pope is not saying that Islam is an inherently violent religion. The Pope is saying that religion connected with violence is something to be repudiated.
And many have now said it must be repudiated by mainstream Muslims if it is to be stopped. A 26-year-old or a 17-year-old girl from Willowick, Ohio, near Cleveland, has terminal cancer. Her dying make-a-wish was to be married. Her boyfriend is 18. Nicole Hastings and Christian Roberts will exchange vows in a church commitment ceremony, which is not quite a legal marriage, tomorrow. If she actually got hitched, she'd lose her health insurance coverage under her family's home policy. Big ceremony and a bigger party tomorrow. Harley Carnes, CBS News.
Hi, is Michael there?
Okay,
my name is Neil.
Yeah.
And we've never actually met before, but I used to own your Volkswagen Jetta.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. I just miss it, you know? And, how is it?
It's great. It's a great car.
Isn't it? It is so great. Let me ask you something. Is it dirty? Because I could wash it.
Feel the pre-love. Certified pre-loved Volkswagens featuring the 112-point inspection. Come take a joyride today.
Honey, what color should we paint the bedroom?
Nah, sweetie, I don't care.
Okay, then pink it is.
Pink? Now I care.
It's the fall color sale going on now at your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Stop in and save 20% on a wide variety of high-quality Sherwin-Williams paints and stains. Plus, get free shipping on custom order wallpaper, too. For painting and decorating,
ask Sherwin-Williams.
For a store near you, visit SherwinWilliams.com.
Peter B. Collins.
As we launch into another foray of progressive talk radio, live, unscripted, and unrehearsed, originating on the left coast, I'm your humble host, Peter B. Collins, and I'm delighted you're listening. It's a Friday. I don't know if about you, but I'm frisky for a weekend off. Looking forward to it. Lots to talk about on today's program. We kick it off with a report from Assemblyman John Laird, Democrat from Santa Cruz, who chairs the Assembly Budget Committee. He'll be with us in seconds here. Coming up in our next break, Matthew Rothschild, the editor of The Progressive. I know some of you are going to get hot and bothered about this. He says about the 9/11 truth movement, get over it. Ha ha ha! We're going to have a lively exchange with Matthew Rothschild, I guarantee you that. Also on the program today, Professor Mark Crispin Miller from New York University will check in from Washington, D.C., warning that Henry Hyde, the retiring congressman from Illinois, has a bill that would require a national voter ID. Many progressives are opposed to this because it's an exclusionary device, exclusively excluding progressives. Glad I got through that. That's a tough phrase. Also, we're going to check in with our compadres at Camp Democracy on the Mall in Washington, D.C. Bob Fitrakis is there. He's the Green Party candidate for governor of Ohio and election protection advocate. And then we'll spend our 5 o'clock hour with Brad Friedman, who is back in California after a summer road trip. And there's a lot to talk about. Voter meltdown during the primary in Maryland this week. Bob Ney has agreed to plead guilty to corruption charges stemming from the Abramoff scandal, and lots more that we'll talk with Brad about coming up in our third hour today. Joining us to kick off the show, and usually he's here later, but for scheduling reasons, Assemblyman John Laird joins us now. As we mentioned, he's the Democrat from Santa Cruz, and he chairs the Budget Committee in the lower house in Sacramento. John, how's it going today?
It's going great. It's nice to be out of session and in places around the South Bay and the coast.
Well, that's a nice break when you don't have to make that four-day trip to Sacramento every week.
It's true. I'm still doing seven or eight things a day, but it's just fun doing them in the district and with people I know and at the most beautiful time of the year in Central California.
Yeah, it is spectacular. First up, I want to kind of recap the session and also talk about some of your legislative successes during this year's cycle. And first and foremost, the special session on the Department of Corrections and the serious problems in the California prison system really didn't produce much, did it?
It didn't, and I was even on the committee in the assembly that reviewed the issue, and I think the real reason it didn't do anything is the governor made this $6 billion proposal and called the special session just weeks before the end of our regular session, and that was more for PR purposes than it was for this ability to act seriously, and his proposals weren't very fleshed out, and so we did our best in a matter of weeks to try to pull them together, and even passed out of the committee a smaller, reduced program that sort of did the planning on some of the things he proposed, but didn't appropriate money to move past that until we knew that there were really some things to be done. And by the time the last two or three days of session came around, those bills weren't able to move on the floor. There was a variety of opposition that emerged to them, and I'll be curious to see if it comes up in the gubernatorial election campaign, because I think it was designed to throw the light off of the federal takeover of the prison health system and sort of the governor's poor performance after his fast start on prisons a couple of years ago.
I was talking to one pretty well-informed individual just yesterday, John, about the prison situation, and he argues that the way the medical care system in the prisons has been taken over by the courts may be the model for a takeover of the entire prison system. Do you see that in the offing?
I think that's very much a potential, and if we don't take action on some of the things that the court is looking at, that's a potential thing they can do. And as it is, on the prison health care, we're walking a fine line between giving them enough money to do what they're ordering us to do and not have them actually reach into the state coffers and take the money out. And if they do it to the entire prison system, there's questions that that would raise about how it operates and what would happen. And it would, in effect, be a de facto appropriation to probably increase money to prisons in California, irrespective of whether it takes money away from health services or education or other things in the budget. And so it's going to be a very difficult situation, and it was one of the reasons why we needed to show some sort of progress to reform and to address some of the issues that are, you know, facing us in the correction system, because failure to act could be an invitation to the federal courts to get involved.
And as you and I have discussed before, I believe firmly that they need to reduce the prison population and not build new institutions. And there are reasonable, rational ways to reduce the population by as much as 20 or 30,000 without, without releasing any violent criminals back into the community.
I think that's a real proposal, and it's something that a bunch of us really want to talk about and follow through on. At the same time, it's highly charged 2 months out of an election, and it's tough to do something right at that time. But the thing, this educated me more on the issue. I have not sat on a committee except through the budget that relates to prison operations, and just learning that we have one of the highest, and I knew this intellectually, but that we have one of the highest recidivism rates of any state prison system means that if you just did specific steps to deal with that over time, that would actually obviate the need for additional prison beds over and above what we do now. We do have people that are not housed in good conditions now, so sort of locking in the current population against future recidivism rates might not be an accurate statement of where to go. But if we really dealt with that, and the governor had a couple of his proposals that really started down that road in terms of reentry and other things, we might actually not have to spend the additional money for additional facilities because we'd be dealing with that problem. So, yet, there, you know, voters are going to vote on Jessica's law, and there's always going to be attempts to raise penalties for anything that exists, and that's always something that is connected to a cost in the prison system, and yet that's not the way it's presented when the voters consider it.
Right. I understand that. The model that I see is the legislature did address community corrections for female inmates, and that, I think, is a progressive approach.
It is, and it's something that we really need to do, and there were certain sub-questions questions in the whole prison thing, such as a woman's facility that had closed in Stockton that was proposed to reopen as a men's facility that was causing the community to riot right now. And there's a bunch of other issues like that that might actually get addressed satisfactorily mm-hmm. with that kind of reform proposal.
We'll certainly talk more about prisons in the future. John Laird with us, Assemblyman, a Democrat from Santa Cruz, here on the Peter B. Collins Show. Now, one of your legislative successes is breaking a 12-year deadlock over funding for the Veterans Prison at Fort... Veterans Cemetery at Fort Ord. Tell us a little bit about this, John.
I'm very excited about that because there have been attempts to provide a veteran cemetery there, and there are tens of thousands of veterans in the Monterey Bay area. In the nearest cemeteries in Santanello, which is just over 70 miles away, and it's not really an option for people whose families are still there. And we figured out a way to meet the state objections and the federal objections and create a framework to raise the money and operate a cemetery. And I believe the governor is going to sign the bill before Saturday celebration at the cemetery site. And what it really does is this all gives us an opportunity. It is not the final construction of the cemetery, but it's an opportunity to raise the money and move ahead. And we still have a lot to do, but it's a breakthrough in just the struggle and the logjam we've had for a number of years.
Mm-hmm. Now, after Katrina, there's great concern about levees in California. The Pajaro levee repairs are authorized under a bill you carried.
Yes, I'm very excited about that because the federal government will put in a significant amount of the money, but every dollar they don't put in has to be picked up locally. And some of the areas in Watsonville and Pajaro that are adjacent to the levee are not high-income areas, and every dollar we bring in from the state is a dollar that the locals don't have to come up with. It cuts their share in half. And so the important thing is if the governor signs the bill, it's the authorization, but the voters have to pass the levy bond. And I've made sure there's enough money in there to cover the Pajaro levy. So with this bill signed and that bond passing, it's a real benefit to people in the northern Monterey and southern Santa Cruz County.
You're awaiting the governor's signature on the high-efficiency toilet bill, and I'll just mention that we're doing a bathroom remodel, and I'm planning to buy two of those low-flow puppies.
That's great, because in the climate change and global warming debate, water's going to be a real issue. Water conservation is the only common source for people across California of new sources, and this would save a significant chunk of water while still doing the job. And there's been a preemption of dual flush toilets in this country by special interest, where they exist in Australia and Europe, and this would allow for those. And then additionally, I negotiated together with my staff a peace between the pipe trades unions and the waterless urinal people to, in effect, legalize waterless urinals across California. And so this bill would save hundreds of millions of gallons of water right at a time when that's important. And we still don't have a tip that the governor's going to sign it, but I'm optimistic, and we have most of the toilet manufacturers in support.
Let's just lock him in the men's room until he comes to his senses. Thank you very much, John. We can tape it, too, and then find it on the website. Thank you very much, John Laird. He chairs the Assembly Budget Committee and represents the people of Santa Cruz in the legislature. Thank you, John.
Thank you, Peter.
Nice to talk with you. Coming up next, Matthew Rothschild joins us. He says we ought to get over the fight for the truth about 9/11, and I'm going to give him a fight on that. That's coming up next on the Peter B. Collins Show. You're listening to the new KRXA 540. Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry in Monterey for 33 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place long before you open your mouth. Dr. Turner interviews every new patient so that he'll understand what is important to you. And because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Sally, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 831-375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street, downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. So for all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens. He cares.
Pam and Nancy from the Potting Shed in Aptos.
One of the biggest benefits for us are the relationships that we establish with our customers. Our customers have said that they love coming to our place because we have great stuff and great prices.
The thing that makes us unique is the mix of things. It's a very eclectic mix. We've become a destination for a lot of people. They'll bring friends out. They'll do little mini tour buses and bring friends. So we really, really appreciate that. We're located at 5752 Freedom Boulevard in Aptos.
About 2 miles east of Highway 1 heading towards Watsonville. We have everything from French soaps to linens to wall hangings.
And it's gotten to the point where people think of us when they need a gift. It's not just a utilitarian purchase or frivolous, but they make us a regular stop when they need a gift.
We're open from 10 to 5 Wednesday through Sunday. Come by, have a cup of tea. The Potting Shed.
Monta Vista Wine and Spirits in Monterey has everything you need, from high-end liquor to the very best in fine wines. It's the real deal. Family-owned for over 40 years, John will give you one-on-one personal attention, just like family. Have a special request? Not a problem. Open every day from 9 to 9. Monta Vista Wine and Spirits is located on Soledad Drive in Monta Vista Village, near the Del Monte Center. Look for Doug Huckleberry, who greets you at the door. Monta Vista Wine and Spirits wants you to please drink responsibly.
Come on in, and you will see the Central Avenue Bakery. Smell the bread, try the scones, everything so tasty you want to take it all home. Vegetarian is a killer affair. We make our meals in a kosher kitchen. I'll make mine falafel with hummus too. A side of couscous and a baba ghanoush, yeah. Open at 7 every day. Have a cup of coffee or your morning latte. Come on in and sit right down. It's the friendliest place in town. Central Avenue Bakery. In PG.
For an unforgettable omelet experience, visit the Central Avenue Bakery today. 173 Central Avenue at the corner of Dewey. PG.
Hello? Hello? What's in the box? Tell me what's in the box.
Rock Rollin' Real Estate. This week on Rock Rollin' Real Estate, hear from Tim Mankey, owner and president of GM Real Estate. He'll talk about the exciting market of Dallas-Fort Worth. Give him a call at 916-208-9000. Sunday mornings at 10, right here on KRXA.
It's 23 minutes past the hour, and in a second, we'll introduce Matthew Rothschild, the editor of The Progressive.
But the world watched in horror. Two hijacked planes. Destroyed our trade center.
Really? Yoko, you're right?
Believe it. We better deal with it.
She says we better believe it.
Keep your chance. Keep your
Matt Rothschild's editor of The Progressive, and he's been taking a lot of flaming email incomings. That wasn't very well put, but you know what I mean. Over an article that he posted a few days ago, in fact, on the fifth anniversary of September 11th, called Enough of the 9/11 Conspiracies Already. Matt, welcome back to the Peter B. Collins Show.
Hey, Peter. Thanks for having me on.
Well, it's I appreciate the work that you did on this, and I appreciate you're willing to come on and go back and forth with me over it. I've read your piece very carefully, and let's see, one, two, I wrote in the margins, there are at least three places where I agree with you. But let me start off with, let's allow you to lay out your basic premise. Why do you think that people who seek the truth over 9/11 are off base, misguided, or wasting time?
Well, I'm all for seeking the truth on what happened on 9/11, but I actually think that the theories that I'm hearing a lot when I go out and talk that are emanating largely from the left about a conspiracy here that didn't really involve Osama bin Laden or Mohammed Atta, that involved senior levels of the Bush administration, maybe Bush himself, maybe Cheney, that give an alternative explanation for what happened on 9/11, don't really stand up to scrutiny. And that there are logical, scientific answers to what happened on 9/11. The conspiracy theorists like David Ray Griffin say that explosives were planted under the Twin Towers, that Flight 77 didn't crash into the Pentagon, that the Pentagon was hit by a missile and other things like that. And that doesn't make sense. I've been reading a lot of reports on this. I've been talking to structural engineers, professors of civil and structural engineering, and to me, there is a lot more on their side that makes sense than there is on our side among the conspiracy people on the left. So I just don't buy the arguments.
Okay, fair enough. Now, let me start with this premise that I don't embrace all of the theories that have been floated, the alternate theories, and I'm skeptical of many of them, as you are. But that doesn't stop me from looking at the official story of 9/11 and saying, wait a minute, this does not square with a lot of the physical evidence that is widely available. And so, Matt, I take the position that in questioning the official story and challenging it and in seeking the truth, I do not need to prove an alternate theory. I don't have to tell you what happened to Barbara Olson, who we know was a passenger on Flight 77. I think it is beyond David Ray Griffin or me or anyone else at this point to even access the information that could substantiate an alternate theory.
Well, that's a cop-out, I think. I mean, if you were going to say that the Pentagon was not hit by this plane with Barbara Olson on it, you got to explain what hit the Pentagon, happened to Barbara Olson, happened to the 63 other passengers.
No, I don't.
Did they go to Roswell, New Mexico? I mean, come on, Peter.
No,
you've got to give an explanation that's logical.
No, we can get there further down the road. First, we need to establish that there are serious questions, and let's take the Pentagon at issue. In your piece, you write that the hole in the building was 90 feet wide. Okay, the estimations by David Ray Griffin and others, including the producers of the Loose Change film, are that it was about 45 feet. In either case, the wingspan of a 767 is greater than either of the openings the estimates of the size of that opening. And so I think Loose Change does a great job in the animation sequence of blowing holes in the story we've been told. It doesn't prove what actually happened. I acknowledge that. But I don't think it's a cop-out to say that it doesn't square with the physical evidence.
Well, that is one explanation for what happened to those wings, but why not look at the Pentagon Building Performance Report of January 2003, which the American Society of Civil Engineers put out, and talk to people who really are scientists who study this, unless they're all in on the conspiracy, too. I happened to talk to a guy at Purdue who's a distinguished professor of engineering, Professor Sozin, who's a progressive, by the way, and he said, look it. The wings, when they hit the Pentagon and those reinforced walls of the Pentagon, and the wings weren't going to make a hole because the wings were going to get crushed by the impact of
the
Pentagon.
Where's the debris of the wings and the engines?
Well, there was some debris. The FBI took some of the debris away. And the other hole inside the Pentagon was a hole that was made by part of that plane as well. He explained it to me. And so I see no reason not to believe his analysis of what happened.
All right, Matt, we got to take a break.
He's been a sucker for years.
We'll return with Matthew Rothschild from the Progressive. You can call in at 1-888-5-PETER-B. It's the Peter B. Collins Show.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Hi, I'm Patty Ross, Realtor. What pops into your mind when you hear the word real estate? Security? Investment?
white picket fences? Did you know that real estate is the single most sought-after asset on the planet? More people have accumulated wealth through real estate than by any other means. So whether you own property and want to cash in your equity, or simply want to take advantage of buying in this changing market, you need a qualified agent who understands market conditions and will listen to your needs. From Santa Cruz to Salinas, from Carmel to Big Sur, call me, Patty Ross, for a free consultation. I'm hardworking, experienced, and I care about you. Hey, forget the rest, get the best. Call me, Patty Ross. My heart's in it.
Contact Patty Ross at Keller Williams Realty in Carmel at 622-6235. That's 622-6235, or visit her website, pattyrosscarmel.com.
ZNS Auto Sales in Monterey, family-owned for 30 years, is where partnership works. Whether you're a first-time buyer and need a safe economy car, or looking for a truck or SUV or a classic, they have it all. Call ZNS before you make that final decision. ZNS open every day at 1179 Del Monte Boulevard between the Navy Postgraduate School and Lake Elistero. High-quality used cars at the very best prices. ZNS Auto Sales, where partnership works.
I am attorney Sean Mills. Sometimes life does not take the direction that you plan. If you find yourself in need of an honest attorney, call me. I can advise you on both criminal and civil matters. Do not settle for an attorney who simply went to college and law school, when you can work with an attorney with significant life experience who uses a common sense approach to everyday legal problems. If you think you need an attorney, I will be glad to offer you a no-obligation consultation and evaluation of your legal issue with no sugarcoating. If you think you have a potential legal issue, it is important that you speak to a qualified attorney as soon as possible. Call me at 831-648-7060. That's 831-648-7060. I am attorney Sean Mills.
In response to rising interest rates, Victor Munoz of Creative Mortgage in Salinas offers the following advice to homeowners with variable rate loans. Don't panic or overreact. If you feel trapped in a frightening squeeze, first analyze your situation calmly, then take the best action available. There are so many types of loans, one is very likely to meet your particular needs. For a free consultation with Victor Munoz at Creative Mortgage, call 757-0436. Let Victor share with you the knowledge that he has built up over many years in the mortgage industry. Call Victor at 757-0436 today.
Join me, Deborah Lindsay, each Sunday afternoon at 2 for Tomorrow Matters. We'll be matching the global problems of today with the local solutions for a better tomorrow. I'll bring in the guests, and you call with the questions and ideas, and collectively we'll set the standards for a more sustainable future, because for all of us, tomorrow matters. Join me right here on KRXA 540 AM for Tomorrow Matters each Sunday at 2.
There are radio talk shows about sports, politics, money, sex, and religion. Now there's a talk show for parents and everyone else who cares for and about children. It's Childhood Matters, every Sunday from 9 to 10 a.m. here on KRXA 540. I'm the host, Rona Renner, the mother of four, a new grandmother, a nurse, and parent educator. Listen and call in Childhood Matters every Sunday from 9 to 10 here on KRXA 540.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show. It's 33 minutes after the hour. We're talking with Matthew Rothschild from The Progressive. You can read his work at progressive.org. If you want car insurance, you go to the other website. And he's got some hackles raised with progressives around the country. He says enough of the 9/11 conspiracies. Have they gotten out of control? Matthew, I want to freely concede, as somebody who does doubt what we've been told about 9/11, that the 9/11 truth movement has attracted some kooks, crackpots, and nuts, and people who claim that, you know, no buildings flew into the World Trade Center. And I would like, at least for our discussion today, to separate out the really fringe claims and just stipulate that I don't embrace them, and that there are many reasonable people who question the official 9/11 story who don't go all the way out to the fringe, and who acknowledge, as Griffin did in his first book, that there simply are many, many questions that linger and that should be answered. In his second book, he established that many of those lingering questions were not even addressed by the Kane-Hamilton-Zellico Commission.
And in his third book, which is just out, Christian Faith and the Truth Behind 9/11, he embraces whole hog the conspiracy theory.
Well, and I haven't read his most recent book, so I'm going to cop out on that. Still, I do admire the work of Griffin in the first two books, and I attended several days of the public hearings of the 9/11 Commission, and I was not only unimpressed, I was seriously disappointed by the way it operated and how they, you know, dug a ditch about 8 miles wide and 3 inches deep. And the truth might have been 6 inches or 8 inches below, but they made sure that they didn't dig deep enough to find it. And so, you know, if we can operate on that basis, I think we can have a good discussion here.
Well, I'm all for that, and let's stipulate some other things, too. There are some things that people who believe in the 9/11 conspiracy, some things that they say are indisputable. One is that the Project for the New American Century said in a paper in 2000 that it would take another Pearl Harbor to get the United States to spend $500 billion in annual allowance to the Pentagon and to get the United States to act more belligerently overseas against Iraq, for instance, or Iran. Mm-hmm. It's also indisputable that the George W. Bush administration has seized on 9/11 as a pretext to go do what it's always wanted to do, which is to wage these wars over oil in Iraq and elsewhere. So, I mean, I know all that. I agree about that. I just don't agree that on 9/11, George W. Bush not only let the attacks happen, but was in on the attacks, or that other people high up in the administration were in on the attacks. I mean, there is a big difference between saying, on the one hand, it was a conspiracy because the Bush administration knew enough that the United States was about to be attacked that it should have stopped it, negligence on one side, to mass murder on our own shores and grotesque treason, which is the Bush administration's senior higher-ups involved in the plot that killed 3,000 people here. And in Griffin's first book, he said there for people to doubt the original story, all that they had to believe was either A, on that one side of the continuum, that the Bush administration knew enough about it to have stopped it, all the way to Z, that they were involved. Well, that's a gigantic continuum.
Well, it is. I understand that. And again, I see people who are struggling to try to find paths to the truth. And you have acknowledged, and you know, there's no argument here, that this is one of the most secretive and deceitful administrations in our lifetimes. And it does set up a lot of people to doubt the Bush administration on virtually everything that they offer us. And when you see the president, even, you know, in his non-political speech on 9/11 this past week, invoking his playbook and trying to conflate it with Iraq, it does underscore the doubts that people have. And in your article, you express some empathy.
I share those. I mean,
we're all struggling with that.
One of the reasons why these conspiracy theories won't go away, especially on the left, is those of us on the left know how deceitful George W. Bush has been. They know that we know that he lied us into this war. We know that there's no low, essentially, that these people won't stoop to, that there's no bottom of their barrel to scrape. And so that lets people jump to the conclusion that, voila, they must have been involved in this deal. But I think the evidence, to my mind, insurmountable evidence is that Osama bin Laden, Mohammed Atta, Al-Qaeda were the masterminds of this plot on 9/11, that those buildings came down at the Twin Towers because they hijacked these airplanes and flew them at fast speed into the planes at into the towers that caused structural damage and started fires, and the combination of the structural damage and the fires brought down those towers.
And I don't believe that.
Okay. Well, why don't you believe it?
Because I think that the damage caused by the planes would have been limited to the upper floors of the structure, or at least the upper half. And my belief is, Matthew, that as the you know, the molten parts from the top started to come down at the speed of gravity, that at some point the steel infrastructure of the building would start to hold. And we would have seen a really ugly display of shards of steel at all different angles as the heat dissipated and the damage to the steel infrastructure started to be reduced. And so I think that the building, you know, should not have collapsed the way it did. It should have, you know, fallen down to some extent and then grabbed on.
Well, you know, I have talked to a lot of engineers. I've read the reports that the American Society of Civil Engineering has put out. They've put out on it. I read something from implosionworld.com that said these buildings fell as you would expect them to fall after the steel had ceased to perform like steel, which happens not when steel melts necessarily, but when steel gets hot over above 400 or 500 degrees, and certainly everyone agrees that that was the minimum temperature there in those buildings. And so, and once it starts to fall, it falls, because you have all that weight and force and energy coming down, so that even if the steel girders, say, in floor 40 mm-hmm. were still strong, they weren't able possibly to withstand the falling force of all those floors above them.
I still say that the pancake theory doesn't hold up because of the way the building is constructed with the central core of vertical steel girders. And again, at some point, those should have taken hold. And the fact that the building pancaked pretty much in its own footprint, to me, is consistent with a demolition. Now, when I say consistent with, I'm not saying that I have proof, Matthew. I'm saying that I doubt the official story, and that is a reasonable alternative. And what I'm pushing for is a new commission that has more power and objectivity than the Kane-Hamilton Commission, because I really would like to find out the truth about this.
Well, I'm not against a new commission, and I think it may put to rest a lot of these theories that I think are baseless. I mean, your assumption is that, or the assumption of people who say this was a controlled demolition, is that people snuck in the middle of the night or even after the planes hit and were able to get explosives in and bring the building down, and yet the building fell from the top to the bottom, not from the bottom to the top, which is what would happen if there were explosives planted at the bottom. It just doesn't add up.
Well, but if these occurred simultaneously, I think there is a scenario that could be described. Now, I want to admit or at least acknowledge one of the greatest arguments you make. You describe it as third. For this conspiracy to have succeeded, it would have had to have been amazingly vast. Not only the high-level members of the Bush administration, including the head of the Secret Service and, you know, people like Richard Clark, but also many others. And I agree that one of the biggest holes in the theories of those of us demanding the truth is that for this to have been pulled off would require incredible coordination and secrecy, which we generally don't see.
Well, there are two things.
And that lingers as a deep question for me, Matthew.
Well, and I appreciate you being upfront about that, Peter. To me, those divide into two areas. One is that if this plot had succeeded by the Bush administration, you'd have to impute to the Bush administration a tremendous amount of competence, a competence that wasn't evident in much that they've done from Iraq to Katrina. And secondly, the chain of people who must have been in the know or should have been in the know is so long that you would think that one link or two of that chain would have broken or squealed to the likes of Seymour Hersh. I mean, he's been getting one scoop after another on stories of less magnitude than grotesque treason by George W. Bush and Dick Cheney. I would think that someone, maybe even someone like Richard Clark, who certainly has no brief for Bush and Cheney, would have given the goods to someone like Seymour Hersh, but that hasn't happened either.
Let's take some calls for Matthew Rothschild. First up, Dave from Eureka. Hello, Dave. You're on the air.
Thank you, Peter. Benny's been tapping on the phone, but I think he's quit.
Okay.
Anyway, Matthew, I think for a person that is with Progressive Magazine, I fear you may have limited your own investigation and research into some Republican talking points and Populist Science Magazine. I have several questions for you. I'll try to ask several quickly and then stay on, and if there's any clarification needed. But how do you think Bin Laden kept the United States Air Force on the ground for almost 2 hours while all this craziness was going on? How would you think that he would accomplish that? And
Let's take them one at a time. Go ahead, Matthew.
Well, I don't think it was Bin Laden who did it. I don't think that the Air Force or NORAD was prepared for this kind of hijacking thing. They were prepared for planes coming from overseas, not from a domestic hijacking situation. So, to me, also, you have to consider the possibility of panic and hysteria and confusion. Listen to the NORAD tapes. There's a great article in Vanity Fair in August.
Yeah, we played them on the air. We played those tapes.
I mean, they don't suggest that, you know, somehow these people have been bought off. Or
well, but Matthew, right in the NORAD tapes is corroboration for the concern that the truth movement has raised about the maneuvers, the war games that were scheduled for 9/11. They had been scheduled for October, but they were pushed back. And, you know, when you listen to the NORAD tapes, you hear more than once a contact. And the first question is this real world or is this a war game?
Well, right, but that's what you'd expect, wouldn't you? I mean, these people have had war games on other dates, too. They always war game, or they war game several times a year. So if you're, it's like there's a fire alarm at school. Is this a real fire alarm, or is this just a drill? I mean, that, to me, isn't proof of anything.
All right, Dave, next question.
All right, I'm not going to get too many of these, but I'll say two for you, sir. You are a bit suspicious as to the character of this administration, so I ask of you, what would make you believe that this might be the one and only time that this administration has been honest with us, the American public, about anything? What would make you think that day would be it?
Well, I am very suspicious of the character of this administration, as I said, and I don't believe that the administration has told the whole truth about what happened on 9/11. I believe the Pentagon and the FAA and other people were not being forthcoming with the 9/11 Truth Commission, weren't telling the truth to the 9/11 Commission. I don't think that Bush and Cheney probably told the truth when they went in there hand in glove, one on top of the other, to testify not under oath. So
we don't
I'm not
know.
Saying everything they told us is the God's honest truth, but I do think the science is overwhelming, that planes hit the towers, that the towers fell because of the impact of the planes, and because of the fires, and also that the Pentagon was hit by that plane and not by a missile. To me, it's overwhelming.
Well, three, how would you explain this, sir? In the history of modern steel construction buildings, three buildings have failed and come to the ground by any combination of impact damage or fire. All three of them occurred on 9/11. How would you explain that? And one other thing, and I guess it's obvious, if it's a fact the government was up to their neck in planning this new Pearl Harbor that they wanted, would you still say, forget about it, give up and go away, or would you think we ought to pursue it?
Well, if you gave me good evidence, I'd say go ahead and pursue it, but I don't see the evidence.
Oh, I do, sir, and I can give you a many amount of
Let me, can I answer your third question about, you know, never have buildings made of steel collapse. Well, never have buildings been hit by airplanes going at this speed with this amount of jet fuel on them collapsed either. You know, this was a one-off kind of deal. This doesn't happen every day.
All right, when we return, we'll talk about Building 7. We're talking with Matthew Rothschild from The Progressive. You can read his article at progressive.org. And we're talking about 9/11. He says, enough of the 9/11 conspiracies already. He wants us to get over it. You can call if you'd like to join us at 888-5-PETER-B. It's the Peter B. Collins Show. KRXA 540, Progressive Talk for Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz.
I'm Pam.
And I'm Nancy.
And we're from the Potting Shed.
In Aptos. We're located at 5752 Freedom Boulevard.
About 2 miles east of Highway 1 heading towards Watsonville. You have to look for us. We're in an old barn, but if you look for our mailbox, it's painted bright yellow and it's shaped like an old barn, so it makes it a little bit easier to find.
The barn has a lot of charm. People tend to come there just because the atmosphere is really nice.
Then they'll come and have a cup of tea, bring their dog if they have one. All the dogs who visit know exactly where the cookie jar is. So it's that kind of a place. People feel very comfortable.
When we started, we were just strictly a garden shop with pots and plants. But we had to evolve through the years because nobody needed pots and plants in the middle of winter. So we started adding things, and now it's a full-fledged gift shop.
We work very hard to try and find things that are unusual and eclectic and well-priced. That's what our customers want. We're open from 10 to 5, Wednesday through Sunday. Come by and have a cup of tea. The Potting Shed.
Let the touch of an angel make your next wedding, anniversary, birthday, or family celebration extra special. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe, located at 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside, just across from Craig and Auto Parts, offering full bakery, deli, and cafe services. In the mood for delicious Italian pastries and cookies, specially brewed Latin American coffee, or traditional espresso drinks? Come to Angelina's, where you'll find palate-teasing cheesecakes and specialty cakes for all occasions, as well as tarts and pies with a wide assortment of seasonal flavors. Angelina's Deli features fresh deli sandwiches, breakfast sandwiches, and breakfast burritos. Try Angelina's specialty Mexican and Salvadoran dishes. They're simply delicious. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe. Open 7 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Sundays, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Treat yourself to the best, where the old world meets the new in a friendly, clean, casual atmosphere. Visit Angelina's today, 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside.
Monta Vista Wine and Spirits in Monterey is family-owned for more than 40 years. That's why when you walk in, you're treated so well. They know what they're doing. Excellent service and great product. They have the best in high-end liquor and an excellent selection of the finest wines. It's the real deal. At Monta Vista Wine and Spirits, you can call ahead and your order will be waiting for you. They treat you like family. Open every day 9 to 9 at 19 Soledad Drive in Monta Vista Village. Monta Vista Wine and Spirits ask you to please drink responsibly.
Children's books, educational toys, and games your entire family will enjoy are always in season at locally owned and operated Thinker Toys. Hi, this is Nurse Rona of Childhood Matters. We know that our children learn by playing, and the caring staff at Thinker Toys will help you choose the ideal gift for toddlers through teens. Stop by our beautiful Carmel store at 7th and San Carlos and the just renovated Thinker Toys at Del Monte Center in Monterey. Thinker Toys is open daily.
And the Peter B. Collins Show continues 10 minutes away from the hour. Mark Crispin Miller joins us live from Washington right after the top of the hour. We continue now with Matthew Rothschild from The Progressive. You can read the piece he's talking about at progressive.org. And Matthew, next I want to turn to Building 7. I still cannot come up with a reasonable explanation for why that building imploded in the same manner of the two towers that were hit by planes and set aflame by the jet fuel.
Well, Building 7 is more of a puzzle than the other two, and frankly, the scientists have had a harder time coming up with an explanation that is satisfactory to them, so I'm not going to tell you that it's open and shut, but let me tell you what the preponderance of the evidence suggests and what they're concluding at this point provisionally, and that is that there was significant damage to Building 7. About 25% of the depth of the building on one side was scooped out, according to the lead investigator for the National Institute of Standards and Technology.
And this was scooped out by the debris from the two towers?
From the two towers, yeah. Thousands of tons of steel girders were falling directly onto that building from the twin towers. So that, to me, gives some explanation. There are other explanations, too.
Now, the videos from that day don't show that kind of direct hit damage, and the video of the building coming down doesn't evidence the kind of carve-out damage that you just described.
Well, I would offer you a source that you can go to, and that would be implosionworld.com. This is a website of people who are in the business of implosions and studying them, and that's where they have that line about thousands of tons of steel girders falling from the Twin Towers onto Building 7. But Shyam Sunder, who is the lead investigator for the National Institute of Standards and Technology, told Popular Mechanics, and I would recommend that your listeners, if you're skeptical, and, you know, people should be skeptical on what I say and what you say, what the conspiracists say, what the government says, check out Debunking 9/11 Myths. It's put out by Popular Mechanics. It's a new book. And wrestle with it yourself. But there are also other explanations for Building 7. There were fuel tanks in Building 7 that a lot of people don't know about. Fuel tanks in the basement, fuel tanks on some of the floors as well.
Yeah, we know about that.
So that added to the fire, and the fire burned. Let me just finish for 1 second, Peter.
Mm-hmm.
The fire burned for 7 or 8 hours, and the building was supposed to be able to sustain a fire of only 3 hours, according to the people who put the building up. And so, to me, it seems, again, like a combination of the impact, not the direct impact of the planes, but the impact of debris plus fire.
Okay. Now, related to Building 7, you also write here, and I'll just say that I found this offensive. Griffin also alleges that Larry Silverstein, who leased the World Trade Center complex, was in on the deal so he could collect the insurance. That's a theory. I don't think it's a full-form allegation. This claim, you say, which he might as well have called the Jew cashed in, dovetails with the anti-Semitic conspiracy theory popular in the Middle East. Now, Matthew, I accept and I deplore that there are people, and I've heard it directly, who say, oh, the Mossad was in on it, and they warned Jews to stay away from the WTC on 9/11. Now, I reject that, and I find it offensive. And I find it equally offensive that to suggest that Silverstein had a financial incentive to order the building pulled is somehow anti-Semitic and could be dubbed the Jew cashed in.
Well, I mean, let's be realistic here, Peter. Silverstein is almost as Jewish a name as you can get as Rothschild. And to say that the person who held the insurance on Building 7 wanted the building to fall so he could collect the insurance, and his name is Silverstein, I mean, you don't have to be who is hypersensitive to anti-Semitism to say that, wow, that may give off a flavor to some people who are reading it, who already have concluded that the Jews or the Mossad or Israel was behind it, and that might fuel their feelings on it. I mean, and look what Griffin was saying about Silverstein. Look at the evidence, so-called, that he has for impugning him this way.
Put aside his ethnicity, Matthew. He refinanced the buildings and took out a new lease for the two towers in July of that year. And then he bought insurance that covered him on multiple attack events. And I'm sorry, the pattern of his behavior has nothing to do with his name or his ethnicity. And to raise these questions is not anti-Semitic, and I really find it offensive that you characterized it that way.
Well, I don't characterize it as anti-Semitic. It gives off the flavor to people who already have assumed, and there are millions of people around the world who have assumed that the Jews did it. And here we have someone with an obviously Jewish name who's implicated by the main theorist of the 9/11 conspiracies as doing it for what? For what Jews always do it for, the money.
Sorry, I don't buy that, and again, I am offended. Let's go to Dave in the Pinnacles. Dave, you're on the air with Matthew Rothschild.
Hello, Peter. Hey, Matthew, there's so many holes in implosion world. It looks like a piece of Swiss cheese. I got a copy of it, and I was reading through it. It's just a total joke. But what I'd like to say to you is this pancake theory doesn't take Newton's theory into
account. Oh, Dave, you're breaking up. See if you can hold your phone still. Say it again. That's even worse. I'm sorry, Dave.
Okay, bye-bye.
You wash out today. Now, Ben and Salinas. Hello, Ben.
Yes, I'll try to be respectful here, sir. Do we not owe it to 6,000 dead Americans, 3,000 in Iraq behind this monkey's war, and the 3,000 that was sacrificed on the altar to the New World Order on 9/11? Do we not owe it to those 6,000 people to find out the damn truth? And you say too many people at the top would have had to know to be in on it. Who in the hell's putting the National Treasury in their private bank accounts? And no steel girders fell on Building 7. That Jew got paid off, and I'm not anti-Semitic, but let's call it what it is, Matthew. Did you believe Benvenista's propaganda piece on last Monday when the trained monkey came out there and gave his little campaign speech in the middle? Are you buying all that, or what's your trip, dude?
There's a lot in there. Take what you'd like.
My trip is I'm a rationalist. You know, I believe in facts. I don't believe in fantasy. I believe in respect for science. The overwhelming opinion of the scientific community, we usually respect on the progressive side. We respect it. We revere it. We bring it to our side when we're talking about global warming, when we're talking about tobacco, when we're talking about stem cell research. But lo and behold, when there's a mountain of scientific evidence on this one, we cast it aside for just the most flamboyant, ridiculous theories that a plane didn't hit the Pentagon with 64 people on it, and that those 64 people vanished into thin air. I mean, what is more believable?
Matthew, we're out of time, and again, I return to my premise that one does not have to prove an alternate theory to doubt or be skeptical of the official stories we've been told. And I'll continue to fight for the truth, hopefully in a reasonable and rational way. And I want to exclude the freaks and the kooks. We don't have a way of doing that officially, but in my own mind, that's what I'll continue to do. I want to thank you for a lively discussion, and thank you for being a progressive who dares to speak his mind in a way that isn't seen as politically correct.
Hey, Peter, thanks for having me on, man.
My pleasure. Good to talk with you. This is the Peter B.
The Grove Market in Pacific Grove is ideal for all of your grovery shopping. Locally owned and operated for 37 years by the Higuera family, the Grove Market boasts the finest selections of just-picked conventional and organic produce our Central Coast farms have to offer. The Grove Market's full-service meat department specializes in the highest quality, choice, fresh-cut, and prepared meats. Local artisanal bakeries deliver breads and other delectable baked goods hot from the oven every morning. To perfect your gourmet home-cooked meal, choose from the Grove Market's outstanding selection of Monterey wines. The Grove Market features competitive prices, personalized service, and home delivery in PG and New Monterey. You can't go wrong at the Grove Market. So shop Monday through Saturday from 8 to 7 and 9 to 6 on Sundays in downtown Pacific Grove, 242 Forest Avenue, just above Lighthouse. The Grove Market, where the locals shop.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
As E. coli infections spread, there's only one thing to do with bagged spinach.
Don't rinse it, don't cook it, throw it out.
The president warns the U.S. will lose vital intelligence if the CIA program of interrogating accused terrorists is shut down.
This is the CBS World News Roundup, late edition. I'm Bill Whitney. It got worse today. Federal health officials now say the outbreak of E. coli illness has spread to 20 states and sickened at least 94 people. One person in Wisconsin died, and in Oregon, Gwen Wellborn barely survived her bout.
The main doctor in the emergency room had come up to me and said that they were very sorry, but there was nothing else that they could do for me.
Wellborn says she doesn't know if she'll be able to eat salad again. Experts trace the outbreak to fresh spinach sold in bags. CBS News correspondent Wyatt Andrews reports they have a theory about how the spinach was tainted.
Public health officials say the most likely scenario here is that some large farm or series of farms, most likely in California, had cow manure in their irrigation water, and that somehow this tainted water was used on the crops.
The produce industry has halted shipments of spinach while it urges the government to get to the bottom of this quickly. The industry says 99% of the spinach crop is safe. Now this.
If you're taking a trip and wanted to go an extra 33,000 miles, would you be better off with the Michelin man driving or with a cabbie?
Where are you going?
Across the country, 11 times.
That'd be about $62,000.
Is that with the air conditioning on or without?
Without.
Well, the Michelin man can beat that hands down. Michelin HydroEdge tires outlast the leading competitor by up to 33,000 miles, so you get more tire for your money. To find a Michelin dealer nearest you, visit MichelinMan.com. Michelin, a better way forward.
The following message brought to you is a public service by Arid Extra Dry.
There's an important election going on right now. It's the election of the executive director of the Wetness Protection Program, and it's critical that you get out and vote today at wetnessprotectionprogram.com, because your vote is a vote against underarm wetness, a vote against odor, a vote for a fresher America. Make sure that your voice is heard, because you and every other American have the right to wetness and odor protection. Visit wetnessprotectionprogram.com.
To fight wetness and odor, just apply Arid Extra Dry.
Struggling with Congress over anti-terrorist policy, President Bush came out swinging at a Rose Garden news conference today.
In his opening statement and in response to questions, President Bush all but demanded that Congress specifically authorize the CIA program of interrogating terror suspects in U.S. custody.
Were not for this program, our intelligence community believes that Al-Qaeda and its allies would have succeeded in launching another attack against the American homeland.
If Congress doesn't act, Mr. Bush warned that the CIA program would have to be shut down for fear the CIA operatives conducting the interrogations might be prosecuted for violating the Geneva Convention ban on cruel and degrading treatment of prisoners. Mark Knoller, CBS News, the White House.
When he speaks at the UN next week, the president says he'll tell the General Assembly that Iran should not be allowed to stall. He was blunt about what asked if he'd meet in New York with Iranian President Ahmadinejad.
No, I'm not going to meet with him. I have made it clear to the Iranian regime
that we will sit down with the Iranians once they verifiably suspend their enrichment program. And I meant what I said.
Just before Mr. Bush spoke, the European Union's top foreign policy official, who's been negotiating with Iran, said they're really making progress. In Iraq, a new tactic against violence. The Interior Ministry says trenches will be dug around Baghdad to keep insurgents and vehicles packed with explosives from getting into the city. Yesterday, a truck bomb in western Baghdad killed two American soldiers. Today, the U.S. military said a third soldier is missing. For the second time this month, Mexico's Baja California Peninsula is in the path of a hurricane. Lieutenant Dave Roberts, a Navy forecaster at the National Hurricane Center, says Tropical Storm Lane became a Category 1 storm this afternoon.
And over the next 24 hours, we're looking for strengthening, possibly to a Category 2 sometime on Saturday.
Lane is already blamed for one death. A landslide caused by heavy rain on Mexico's Pacific coast killed a 7-year-old boy. Hurricane John traveled roughly the same path a couple of weeks ago. In the Atlantic, Hurricane Gordon has weakened to a Category 1 as it moves north, but Tropical Storm Helene is approaching hurricane strength. Neither system threatens land. Like the leaves on the trees, oil prices are starting to fall, and that's good news as we head into the heating season.
With the changes we've seen in both the crude and the gasoline markets, the consumers are likely to look forward to lower prices to heat their homes this winter.
Mark Rout of the firm Energy Security Analysis says natural gas prices are also down sharply, stockpiles are high, and the El Nino weather pattern might keep temperatures warmer than usual. You're listening to the CBS World News Roundup.
If you're taking a trip and wanted to go an extra 33,000 miles, would you be better off with the Michelin man driving or with a cabbie?
Where you going?
Across the country, 11 times.
That'd be about $62,000.
Is that with the air conditioning on or without?
Without.
Well, the Michelin man can beat that hands down. Michelin HydroEdge tires outlast the leading competitor by up to 33,000 miles. So you get more tire for your money. To find a Michelin dealer nearest you, visit MichelinMan.com. Michelin, a better way forward.
Hello?
Hey, is Mark there?
Yes, it is.
Mark, I'm Paul.
Yeah?
I own your old, new Passat.
Oh, yeah,
Yes!
Yeah.
Oh, boy, it's great talking to you. Listen, if you ever want to just swing by and just, you know, sit in the Passat, you give me a call anytime, we'll make that happen.
Feel the pre-love. Certified pre-loved Volkswagens featuring a 112-point inspection. Come take a joyride today.
It's the Peter B. Collins Show, live from the left coast. Coming up later this hour, we're going to get you an update on the alarm that has been sounded over tainted spinach, allegedly tainted with the E. coli bacteria. We'll talk about that with our Scott Dick. Also, later this hour, Bob Petraeus is going to check in from Camp Democracy in Washington, D.C., where he's been leading some seminars today. And we'll get the latest on his Green Party candidacy for governor of Ohio. And next hour, Brad Friedman, unleashed for a full 60 minutes. Brad will be with us, and we're going to talk about all kinds of things related to election protection and some other issues, too. At any moment, you can join the conversation. That's why we call it a talk show. And you can call me toll-free at 888-5-PETER-B. That's 888-573-8372, 888-5-PETER-B. Joining us now is Mark Crispin Miller. He's a professor of history at New York University, NYU, and he blogs like a maniac. Hello, Mark.
Hey, Peter. How are you?
I'm doing fine today. And you?
I'm doing okay.
Good. Well, I wanted to talk to you about a couple of your recent dispatches. One relates to a measure that Henry Hyde, the retiring and right-wing congressman from Illinois, apparently has authored, and your email that came in yesterday was the first I've heard of it, that he is proposing a national voter ID card.
That's right.
And this is a recommendation that came out of the the Baker-Carter Commission that was supposed to bring us all kinds of reforms after the failed elections of 2000 and 2004. And when I first heard about it, I said, I don't have any real problem with that. Then when I dug in a little deeper, I realized that this is an exclusionary device.
Exactly.
It is intended to limit the participation of seniors and minorities and people who don't drive, people who are typically low income, who don't have a driver's license.
That's exactly right, and that's its purpose. What the Hyde bill proposes to do, basically, is to nationalize a practice that is being adopted piecemeal throughout the country. In Ohio, for example, there was a law passed some months ago which might as well be called the disenfranchisement bill. It quadrupled the price of recounts. It made machine audits far more difficult, and it also requires voters in Ohio to have a photo ID. This is not unrelated to the fact that Ken Blackwell, who's the candidate for governor, is intent on winning that post. You know, he's the infamous Secretary of State who helped Bush Cheney steal Ohio in 2004.
Mm-hmm.
He's now running as a Republican for governor. He is the fair-haired boy of the religious far right in Ohio. There's a network of right-wing pastors called the Ohio Restoration Project. They love him. The people of Ohio don't think much of him. His approval ratings are in the 30s. But I think, you know, we can see from this combination of factors that the Republican approach to elections is to win by any means necessary, irrespective of the will of the electorate, you see. So there's a lot of activity of this kind, both state and national, just lately, and some other stuff is pending. But I think it's crucial that people understand, I'm going to cut right to the chase here, that the Republicans plan to steal the election in November. If through some fluke they lose the House by a couple of seats, they will be screaming about election fraud, which, when you think about it, is, you know, like the ultimate swift boat move.
Well, and they call it voter fraud.
They call it voter fraud, right. And it's based on, you know, I mean, there is a historical basis for worrying about voter fraud, which the Democratic Party has in its time committed. But, you know, having written my book, Fooled Again, mm-hmm. about the election of 2004, I can say with perfect confidence that 99% of the fraudulent activity or more that was committed in the last election was committed by the Republicans. So this voter ID thing is a terrible idea. As a historical note, let me add, Peter, that Carter was actually opposed to the adoption of this recommendation.
Right, it came from Baker.
It came from Baker.
Mm-hmm.
But I, you know, they gave him something that he wanted. Maybe it was a paper trail, or I don't know what it was. But whatever it wasn't good enough. And the fact is that Hyde now has political cover to basically try to put across something that amounts to the equivalent of a poll tax. You know, as you pointed out, people who are not well off, who don't drive, will have to pay for these things. And, you know, it's not only the expense, because it's not crushing. I think it's probably about $20-$25. But it's not so easy for a lot of people to, you know, get it together to go down to City Hall and get this kind of thing. Mm-hmm. When you're poor, you don't have a car.
Now, Mark, did you see, this came across in a blur, and I just read it early this morning. As I recall, a court in Missouri yesterday overturned a voter ID, a photo ID law, saying that the right to vote is a right and not a privilege, and that the right to drive is a privilege, and therefore they're taking a fairly strong and narrow position that you cannot require anything of a voter because they have an absolute right to vote if they are registered.
Now, I hadn't heard that, and that makes my heart sing, I must say. I mean, this is fundamental. You know, Tom Paine said that the right to vote is the basis on which all our other rights depend. People like Antonin Scalia, who you may remember, argued that it doesn't say anywhere in the Constitution that Americans have a right to vote. You know, that whole movement is really deeply hostile to and resentful of democracy. They don't want to see the franchise spread very broadly.
Mm-hmm. Now,
so it's really refreshing to hear that a Missouri court took that position.
And let me turn now to the rights of voters in California's Congressional District 50.
Mm-hmm.
I know from your emails that you followed the work of Brad and Paul Leto, the attorney who filed the challenge that was overturned by a Superior Court judge,
right,
on the basis that even though there are lingering questions about whether the election was properly conducted, and even though Brian Bilbray was sworn in 7 days after the election and 16 days before it was to be certified, the judge is saying that once he was sworn in, the state lost jurisdiction over this.
Yeah,
and if that is replicated, and to get back to your earlier point about the Republican intention to steal elections this November, if they replicate that procedure, you could have questionable elections where the Republicans, who still hold a majority presently, could rush the swearing in of alleged winners and game the system that way.
Exactly. They will summarily swear in the people in their own party, you know, which raises the question of why we should bother to go to the trouble and expense of elections at all. I mean, why not let Dennis Hastert simply choose our representatives for us, you know, coast to coast? This is a profound crisis that we're in. We're in trouble as serious as the trouble that Mexico is in. We're past the time when we can feel superior to other countries because we have this great democracy and they're always having troubles. We're in the same boat with them. And I come down on this so hard because I'm frankly troubled by how often I have heard over the last couple of weeks, you know, very well-meaning and progressive people putting all their eggs in the get-out-the-vote basket. I think it is crucial that we get out the vote. I think it is crucial that we have as high a turnout as possible on Election Day, because the higher the turnout on Election Day, the harder it will be for the Republicans to spin their upset victory. But the point is, if people are not aware that there's a strong likelihood of another stolen election, there will be all this get-out-the-vote energy. People will pin all their hopes on that one day. And when it appears to be the case that they lost, if they haven't been forewarned about the strong likelihood of fraud, they'll become completely demoralized, when what we will need at that moment precisely is for people to resist and to say, we don't recognize governments that aren't elected by the people. We're not paying taxes to a system that, you know, is run by people whom we voted against. It's going to come down to that. I don't mean to sound alarmist. I think it's just a fact. And I think that Americans had better get their civic muscle tone back, because we're going to be little more than slaves if we are, in fact, denied the right to vote, which is what the Republicans have in store for us.
I don't believe you're being alarmist. I think you're sounding an appropriate alarm. And the leadership of the Democratic Party and candidate Francine Busby simply don't get it. Mark, I interviewed Busby about 10 days ago, and I was so disappointed in her lack of backbone and lack of real concern that they're going to do this again to her in November. We're going to take a break and return with Professor Mark Crispin Miller, right here on the Peter B. Collins Show. If you have a question or comment, lines are open at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. You can also email me, Peter, at peterbcollins.com. You're listening to KRXA 540.
What's in the box? Tell me what's in the box.
Rock, Roll, and Real Estate. This week on Rock, Roll, and Real Estate, hear from Tim Mankey, owner and president of GM Real Estate. He'll talk about the exciting market of Dallas-Fort Worth. Give him a call at 916-208-9000. Sunday mornings at 10, right here on KRXA.
Hans Auto Repair in Seaside is hands down the finest Volvo maintenance and repair shop in Monterey County. Owners Mike Brooks and Tracy Palacco are both factory trained in Volvo service and repair. They provide outstanding quality and great service at reasonable prices. They only work on Volvos, so you know that your Volvo will be in caring and skilled hands. Hans Auto Repair is at 384 Olympia Avenue in Seaside, or you can call Mike and Tracy at 583-9820. That's 583-9820.
I am attorney Sean Mills. Sometimes life does not take the direction that you plan. If you find yourself in need of an honest attorney, call me. I can advise you on both criminal and civil matters. Do not settle for an attorney who simply went to college and law school when you can work with an attorney with significant life experience who uses a common sense approach to everyday legal problems. If you think you need an attorney, I will be glad to offer you a no-obligation consultation and evaluation of your legal issue with no sugarcoating. If you think you have a potential legal issue, it is important that you speak to a qualified attorney as soon as possible. Call me at 831-648-7060. That's 831-648-7060. I am attorney Sean Mills.
It's Behind the Wheel, the Consumer New Car Review. I'm Peter B. Collins. This week, I've been behind the wheel of the 2007 Ford Escape Hybrid, a midsize four-door SUV with four-wheel drive. If you've been considering a hybrid, be sure to test drive an Escape. If you think you need a six-cylinder gas engine, Ford makes a gas-powered Escape, so compare them yourself side by side. For most people, the hybrid has plenty of power and acceleration, and its quiet operation is a real plus. Our hybrid demo passed the grueling hill climb test on most attempts, but one time it stalled with a max payload of four adults and luggage and had no reserve power to restart uphill. Inside, the Escape is comfortable with enough headroom and legroom, and our demo has a $2,000 GPS navigation system that works well and could use a bigger screen. By the numbers, the 2007 Ford Escape Hybrid gets 36 miles in the city, 31 on the highway, that's right, and stickers in California for about $30,000.
We do have reports of a grass fire. Santa Cruz County, northbound 1 after Buena Vista Drive. Grass fire. Crews are en route to check this out, so it might be causing a bit of a visual hazard. Watsonville, northbound Highway 1 before 129. Tree fell into the fast lane there, so watch out for that. Also keep your eyes open in San Martin, northbound 101 at East San Martin Avenue. Three boxes of produce have fallen into the lanes. SoCal San Jose Road at Olive Springs Road. We have a two-vehicle accident. Both vehicles have been cleared from the road. Way onto the right-hand shoulder, so a tow truck en route to pick them up. Both directions of Highway 17 through the Santa Cruz Mountains, check it in, stall and accident-free. This report is brought to you by River Rock Casino. Sign up for a new Players Club card at River Rock Casino and receive $10 in free casino play. Only from River Rock Casino in Alexander Valley. See Players Club for details. I'm Diane with traffic on KRXA 540.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Here we go, starting another war. We got our heads up our asses. You know, we're really bored. Hey, we're Republicans, and people say we act like clowns. We love natural disasters. Did somebody really drown?
Here comes the next verse about stealing elections.
Yeah, you know it's true. And if you don't believe us, turn on the nightly news. Hey, hey, we're the Republicans, and people say we act like clowns. We just steal elections, run the country into the ground.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show with Mark Crispin Miller, and I misidentified him. He does teach at NYU, but he's a professor of media studies, not history, and I apologize for that. You can always correct me, Mark.
It's okay. I have such respect for you, I wouldn't dare.
Oh. And he's the author of Fooled Again, How the Right Stole the 2004 Election and Why They'll Steal the Next One, Too, Unless We Stop Them. And before the break, we were talking about District 50, the Busby-Bilbray race. And just to expand understand a little bit, Francine Busby appeared to think that if she kept a low profile and didn't make too much of a stink over the stolen election in the special that occurred with our primary in June, that she could prevail this fall.
That's what that's the way the Democrats think, and I think it's based on denial.
Yeah.
Let's go back to Ohio. There's every indication that Blackwell has it sewed up. I mean, the system is in his hands. He has rigged it. And you talk to the Democrats who are running there. They, you know, you say to them, what are you going to do about the fraud situation? And they'll say, well, that's why we're running. I mean, what is the logic there? How is it that they think they can win without facing the issue, you know?
Well, and people seem to think that challenges to elections are only appropriate in the Ukraine or in Mexico,
yeah.
But somehow it's impolite to do it in this country. Witness John Kerry, Al Gore.
Yeah, well, that's right. And it's I fault the media for this because the media was very quick to define the whole issue as it's out there with little green men and Elvis sightings.
Right.
You know, I mean, within the week after Election Day 2004, when there were many legitimate questions to be raised, all these major papers in this country, including the New York Times and the Washington Post and the Boston Globe, all came out with these derisive articles laughing at people who had concerns and also taking that occasion to make fun of the blogosphere.
Right.
Well, you know, the blogosphere is actually no different from the old printing presses that were in this country in the 18th century. I mean, I fail to see the difference. It's citizens getting out the word. Now, there is a professional cast of journalists we have today, but that doesn't mean that they represent what the framers had in mind when they, you know, moved to protect the press and the Constitution. I think that they have failed us very badly. If the American press can't rouse itself to look seriously into the question of election fraud, then they don't deserve constitutional protection, because that protection is based on the assumption, the rational assumption, that they will stand as a check on executive power. They will keep us politically informed. They will help us to keep our freedoms. Well, they're not doing that.
No, they're helping us understand Anna Nicole Smith's latest tragedy, the breakup of Whitney and Bobby, the JonBenet Ramsey case, the phony recap of 9/11 in that docu-dreck on ABC. All right, I won't. Let's take a call. Billy in Capitola, welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show with Mark Crispin Miller.
Thank you, sirs. You know, you guys are right, and I guess in a world where you know your president's a liar, it's possible to think he's behind 9/11, that they're stealing the elections. Oh, wait, we know they're stealing the elections. And my question is this. So, seriously, when they steal the next one, what do we do? If we don't do something about it, then we really let down everybody from now on, because that's all we will get.
Well, Mark, what's your sense? What should we do?
Well, see, if it's the first thing we must do, the crucial thing that we have to start doing like yesterday, is to make sure people understand that it has happened. You see, this whole business about war and terrorism and Bush giving that preposterous speech on 9/11, everyone is reacting to this as if they actually believe that the reason why the Republicans keep hammering on terrorism is because they think it will make people vote for them. That is false. They don't hammer on terrorism because they think it will make people vote for them. They hammer on terrorism because that will serve as the most plausible rationale to explain their next upset victory. Do you see the distinction I'm making?
I do.
So what it's crucial that people understand that it was stolen. In 2004, when Kerry conceded, There was a vast national collapse, as I believe the majority of the electorate just fell apart. They were deeply demoralized because they actually believed that despite all their best efforts, they'd been defeated by an extremist regime.
That's to Ohio.
The crucial thing that we have to do is make clear to the whole country and to the world that this election in 2004 was stolen, and not just in Ohio, but from coast to coast, and that they've been working very, very deliberately and skillfully since that election, passing laws, gerrymandering, locking up tens of thousands of people from New Orleans so they can't vote.
The HAVA,
all of this stuff.
The HAVA Act, which mandates these machines that we can't trust. Billy, thanks for your call.
Exactly. So the point is that, you know, when people know it has happened, okay, I am convinced that they will do the right thing. I can't predict exactly what that will be.
Mm-hmm.
But it's up to us, not up to the Democrats, not up to the press. It's up to us to insist that we have the right to vote.
Let's get a quick one in from Steve and Selena. Steve, 30 seconds. Go ahead.
I don't know if I can do this, but what I'm scared about is I've heard that some of the polls are doing are rigged. And if they keep reading the polls, maybe he came out with something just a couple of days ago saying that now more people think the Republicans are better on terrorism than Democrats. If they keep rigging the polls, then when they rig the machines, then there won't be such a shock.
Well, I think that kind of stuff is, that's what they do best, okay?
Yeah, there's no
this
level
to which
they
such an extreme regime that they must resort to these kinds of tactics in order to have power, because they could never, ever be elected legitimately, and they never have been elected.
Steve, thanks. You did that very well in a very short period of time. Mark Crispin Miller, thanks for joining us today. We'll talk to you again soon.
Okay, I'm going to be out there in early October, and people can get the details on my blog, which is markcrispinmiller.com.
Very good. We'll look forward to seeing you here, and you're invited to the studio.
Oh, I'd love to come in.
Great. That's
right,
Mark Crispin Miller. Coming up next, a report on the E. coli breakout and a report from Camp Democracy.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Miguel Sarmiento, owner and chef of the Mexicali Grill in New Monterey, cordially invites you to visit his restaurant and enjoy quality Mexican food prepared with California seasonings and sauces, all with personalized, attentive service. Miguel has more than 14 years of experience preparing Italian, Hawaiian, Mexican, French, and American dishes in restaurants throughout Monterey County. Looking to savor the best Mexicali cuisine served with great margaritas or fine imported or domestic beers? Visit the Mexicali Grill today, located at 204 Lighthouse Avenue at the corner of Reeside Avenue in New Monterey. The Mexicali Grill is open daily for lunch from 11 to 3 and for dinner from 5 to 9. For takeout orders, call 375-9801. That's 375-9801. Miguel has a message for all Central Coast residents who appreciate delicious, high-quality Mexican food at reasonable prices.
Todos son bienvenidos en el Mexicali Grill. Try us. You'll like us a lot.
Faith and reason. This is Dave Ross on the CBS Radio Network. The one bright note in the rising religious tension that grips the world is that the Pope loves everybody and everybody loves him. In fact, Pope Benedict was in Regensburg, Germany just this week, making the point that cultures and religions must understand each other and that religious belief cannot be forced. And during this speech about cultural understanding, he decided to quote a 14th century Byzantine emperor who at the time was trying to protect his empire from Muslim invaders. And this emperor, said the Pope, wrote the following, quote, "Show me just what Muhammad brought that was new, and there you will find things only evil and inhuman, such as his command to spread by the sword the faith he preached," unquote. The Pope never explicitly agreed with the emperor's words, and he was not trying to say anything against Muhammad, just making the point that violent forms of jihad as practiced by certain Muslim radicals are incompatible with the nature of God, utterly uncontroversial in today's world. Except, as it turns out, for the angry protests that have now spread from Turkey to Indonesia. In one city in India, copies of newspapers carrying the Pope's remarks had to be seized as a precaution, and one Muslim commentator said, "Things could get worse if the Pope does not apologize." And I don't think he's referring to candlelight vigils. Oh, yes, and the Pope is scheduled to visit Turkey in November, which gives His Holiness about a month and a half to figure out that no matter what 14th century Byzantine emperors may have thought, the Islam of today, and I'm only going to say this once, is about peaceful coexistence. Now this.
Computer security threats such as spam, spyware, viruses, phishing attacks, and pop-up ads invade your business every day through email, web browsing, and instant messaging. And the right way to stop them is with Barracuda Network's Spam, Spyware, and IM Firewalls. Call 888-ANTI-SPAM now and ask for your free trial. Barracuda Network's firewalls are affordable and easy to use. That's why over 30,000 companies and leading universities are Barracuda Network's customers. Call 888-ANTI-SPAM. 888-ANTI-SPAM. Or go online to BarracudaNetworks.com.
This is Dave Ross.
Have you thought about owning more real estate but don't know where to turn? Are you interested in learning how to make good profit buying and selling real estate? Or do you want to learn how to let your tenants pay the mortgage while you enjoy the equity? If you want to learn the ins and outs of real estate investing, listen to The Real Estate Guys, Sunday nights at 5 on KRXA. You can own more real estate. The Real Estate Guys will show you how. Listen Sunday nights at 5 and on the web at realestateguysradio.com.
This is Frank Don. On Sunday evenings at 7 p.m. here on KRXA 540 a.m., join me for Frank Don's Astrology Hour, a live call-in program to discuss astrology, the astrology of the world, and your own personal astrology. Let me answer your questions, and let me teach you how astrology can help you make better life choices. Here on KRXA 540 a.m. from 7 to 8 every Sunday evening, join me for Frank Don's Astrology Hour.
And the Peter B. Collins Show continues on this fabulous Friday on the Left Coast. Coming up in our next segment, about 10 minutes away, we're going to check in at Camp Democracy in Washington, D.C., where I was last Thursday and Friday. And Bob Fitrakis is going to join us. He's an Ohioan, a guy who's been fighting for election integrity. And he's fighting so hard that he's the Green Party candidate for governor in Ohio this year. So we'll get that live report from Camp Democracy. And our usual Friday Gab Fest with Brad Friedman coming up next hour here on the PBC Show. Ah, but first, Scott Dick returns. Scott was on our program yesterday discussing military and veterans affairs. He's quite knowledgeable there. But as a Renaissance man, he also is the host of the Tasty Planet, which airs on KRXA 540 on the Central Coast every Saturday afternoon from 1 to now 4 o'clock.
Till 4 o'clock, that's right, Peter.
That's right. And, Scott, you wanted to share with us some information about this report of an E. coli breakout. I've just heard scattered reports about it, so fill us in on what's going on.
Well, first, Peter, I was going to talk about it, and we'll talk about it tomorrow during the show, but I thought since you have a wider reach that it's important to get out that the FDA sent out a warning on the E. coli and bag spinach. And if you will, just let me read the three lines.
Sure.
The U.S. Food and Drug Administration is issuing an alert to consumers about an outbreak of E. coli in multiple states that may be associated with the consumption of produce. May be associated with the consumption of produce. To date, preliminary epidemiological evidence suggests that bagged fresh spinach may be a possible cause of this outbreak. Based on the current information, FDA advises consumers not to eat bagged fresh spinach at this time. That's all they say. The rest goes on to talk about E. coli.
Mm-hmm.
So then the AP comes out pretty early, a guy named Andrew Bridges, and writes, even if you wash the spinach, you could still be at risk. Sober warnings for salad lovers come from federal health officials Friday as they struggle to pinpoint a multi-state E. coli outbreak. And then he goes on to say that they're trying to pin, they've actually been thinking that it may be coming from Monterey, California. And then if you look, if you do a Yahoo search, this is what you find. You find all these references, but this is what they're writing. An outbreak of E. coli in eight states has killed one person and sickened at, next one, E. coli cases traced to bagged spinach. Next one, nationwide, should not eat fresh bagged spinach, says health officials probing. Next one, an outbreak of E. coli in eight states had left one person dead and 50, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's like a bomb went off someplace.
Well, here's a statement that came in about an hour ago from Congressman Sam Farr, the Democrat of Carmel and this area. He issued this statement. The FDA has released information regarding an outbreak of E. coli that the agency believes is related to contaminated bagged fresh spinach. I am assured that all the appropriate federal and state officials are working to define the source of contamination and prevent the disbursement of any suspect packages. I'm confident that the industry will go above and beyond the call to resolve the problem once the source of any contamination is identified. Food safety is of paramount importance both to consumers and producers. The public can have confidence that the FDA and the produce industry will do everything possible to ensure public health and safety. The produce industry of the Salinas Valley is known for its market responsiveness and integrity, and I have faith that in this situation, too, it will do what is right and do it immediately. So that's the statement from Congressman Farr.
And I just got off the phone while I was waiting to come on with Eric Loretson, who is the Agricultural Commissioner for Monterey County, and I asked him if there's anything new. He said nothing. It's not even a mandatory recall, but if you looked at the web and the news services, we're talking about a killer E. coli outbreak in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And in let me read something from the Associated Press that was earliest, the one that was the most reasonable that I've found. In California, state health officials were investigating a possible case that could be linked to the outbreak and warned consumers not to eat the produce. FDA officials do not know the source of the outbreak other than it appears to be linked to bagged fresh spinach. And then they go on to say, we're telling people, this is from Michigan, we're telling people if they have bagged produce and they feel like it's a risk, throw it out. If they feel like they have to eat it, wash it first in warm water. So what turned out, or what started out as a simple warning to be alert about a possibility of a contaminated product has gone into these stories talking about this killer spinach that's out there.
Now, Scott, you may not know more than I do, and I'm about to display some of my ignorance, but I thought that E. coli was a bacteria that was primarily something that was found in tainted meat products. I didn't think that E. coli could migrate into, farm products, produce.
Well, it's a fecal-based bacterium that lives in the gut of cows, and traditionally that it's spread, from somebody that it's spread by hand or through water or actually if you touch it. For example, if a baby has E. coli and you handle the diaper and then you don't wash your hands, you transmit it to yourself.
I see.
A lot of these E. coli breakouts have been, of course, the ones in meat from unsanitary practices at the packing houses.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other ones that have to do with produce in the past have been traced to contaminated water that we use to wash the produce. Or if you harvest if you fertilize the fields with cow manure.
Mm-hmm.
There are several strains of E. coli that don't hurt humans. This happens to be one that does, but we're talking one person in the United States. There are millions of bags of fresh, triple-washed spinach that's sent out and consumed every day in America, and they don't even know for a fact it is coming from the bagged spinach.
Mm-hmm.
And they certainly don't know it's coming from Monterey County. And so I just wanted to get on with you, Peter, and say, I'll probably riff on this for 15 or 20 minutes tomorrow and say this is not fair to the growers and producers. You know, I am no shield for these guys. If they're producing something I don't like, I talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
But this could be devastating not only to the because consumers are lazy. They'll see bagged lettuce or bagged mixed greens or bagged produce of any kind, and they go, oh, FDA warning, plastic bags, produce, and they just won't buy it.
Yeah, better have more Doritos.
Exactly. And spinach is a major source of nutrition, and they said there's mostly women who have been infected with E. coli, and women eat spinach, and it's they have a tendency to eat more healthy than men, believe it or not, and
So
I could see that. But there's no real evidence, and the FDA said that over and over, that's not even, they can't even really point the finger at bagged spinach.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Peter, I think you know that investigations of contaminations, they ask people what they ate.
Yeah, that is not always the most reliable source of information.
Exactly. So in these 50, it started out with 54 across 8 different states. They asked them what they ate, and so I guess when they put it into the computer, out pops bagged fresh spinach.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only evidence that they have so far.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate the update on this, Scott. It's bringing me up to speed on some developing issues here, and we'll keep an eye on this, and I guess I'll just have frozen spinach tonight.
Which is perfectly safe.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Peter.
And you can tune in the Tasty Planet tomorrow from 1 to 4 on KRXA 540. And if you're outside the Central Coast area, you can log on to KRXA540.com and listen to the live stream. I'm Peter B. Collins. It's 41 minutes past the hour. In just a few, we're going to hook up with Camp Democracy in Washington and Bob Fitrakis. But this gives me a couple of minutes to share something with you that I've been reading through. It took me a little while because it's a lengthy article, and it also indicates that I'm behind in my magazine reading. I love The New Yorker. It's a great publication, and with Seymour Hersh and a lot of other great writers, they've brought some great investigative stories to the forefront. I just got finished reading an article in the July 10th, 17th issue of The New Yorker, and I want to recommend it to you. Maybe you got the magazine lying around your house, or you know somebody who subscribes, or maybe you'll be able to find this article online. It's written by Lawrence Wright. And it profiles, again, at some length, the investigative work of an FBI agent who is a Lebanese-American named Ali Soufan. And I'm going to tell you more about Ali Soufan in a moment. But I want to present this to you against the sordid backdrop of this week's presidential lobbying in Washington, D.C. George W. Bush wants Congress to legitimize his right to torture. It's as simple as that. Euphemisms are used and arguments are made about how if Congress doesn't give him the legislation at once, it's going to kill a CIA program that is keeping America safe. And, of course, we get no details about the program because, well, we don't have clearances and they don't want us to know the details because this is one of those things that they can dangle in front of some portion of the American public and win support. And so consider that yesterday the president and the vice president together went to Capitol Hill to try to overcome the principled objections of John Warner, Lindsey Graham, and John McCain, Republican senators who are pushing back on the administration's desire for a blank check on detentions, compliance with the Geneva Conventions, and the other issues that caused the Supreme Court to rule against Bush in Hamdan versus Rumsfeld. And what does the president want? He wants us to believe that aggressive interrogation could deliver information at critical times that could protect Americans. And it's BS. It's bogus. It really is. And I'm about to give you my evidence. But first, I just want to remind you that the president and the vice president are operating in this manner consistent with George Lakoff's interpretation of Republican rhetoric and language. It's the strict father saying that if I can whip my son, I can get him to behave the way I want. So, back to the story of Ali Soufan. He was a close associate of John O'Neill, the FBI agent who was working on terrorism issues to the point that he offended a lot of Bush administration leaders. And Ali Soufan went with O'Neill to Yemen after the bombing of the Cole, the USS Cole, in the fall of 2000. And he did some very imaginative investigation and interrogation of suspects. And, you know, the U.S. ambassador was obstructionist, trying to limit the investigation. The Yemeni government was not always cooperative. There were many hurdles to overcome. But after 9/11, this guy, Ali Soufan, was still in Yemen. And he discovered, or made contact with, a suspect who was able to give him the names of five of the hijackers and confirm the participation of some of the Al-Qaeda higher-ups. He didn't use torture. He didn't use waterboarding. He didn't use loud music or sensory deprivation or exposure to extreme temperatures. He sat down with this man. He talked about the Quran. He talked about what it means to be a real Muslim. And over time, he won this man's confidence. And the guy told him virtually everything he wanted to know. And this is my example of why torture isn't necessary. Torture is not American. Torture will not advance even the misguided aims of the Bush administration. Torture is wrong. Torture is barbaric. Bush wants Congress to rubber stamp his right to torture. And fortunately, there are a few principled Republicans who are fighting back. And Democrats, led by Harry Reid, suggest they may filibuster the legislation if the wrong bill gets to the floor of the Senate. I encourage you to watch this one closely. We're going to take a break and return and check in at Camp Democracy in Washington, D.C. with Bob Petraeus. That's next here on the Peter B. Collins Show. You're listening to the new KRXA 540.
Tired of that dreaded drive into town for fresh quality produce? The Produce Barn in Carmel Valley Village has the perfect solution to your problem. Owners Ed Drobnik and Don Bikey have over 50 years of combined experience in the produce business and are passing the substantial savings on to their customers. The Produce Barn offers a wide selection of conventional and certified organic seasonal fresh fruits and vegetables. We also carry a fine selection of specialty candies and snacks, exquisite gourmet gift items, and feature Freedom Meats savory sausages, bacon, and marinated fresh meats. Heck, we even throw in free recipes. So, whether you're a restaurant, lodge, home chef, or treasured village visitor, stop by the Produce Barn at 13750A Center Street in the Center Street Plaza, behind Wells Fargo, and right next to the Chatterbox. We're open 7 days a week.
The Produce Barn in Carmel Valley Village, 659-5916. That's 659-5916. The Produce Barn.
This is Laura Pruneta of Pruneta Real Estate Advisors. As your licensed real estate broker, our mission at Pruneta Real Estate Advisors is excellence and contribution, and our only concern is to promote and protect your interests. Quite simply, if the best result for you means no deal for us, we will immediately tell you. Selling but concerned about tax consequences? As a CPA, I can advise you of the implications of any capital gain. Seeking income-producing property? With a Stanford engineering degree, I have developed cash flow analysis to evaluate various opportunities. If you're buying a home, my promise is to help you find your dream house under the most favorable terms. We at Pruneta Real Estate Advisors are dedicated to our community. We will contribute $250 out of every local transaction to the school of your choice. I am Laura Pruneta of Pruneta Real Estate Advisors. Call me at 753-5310. That's 753-5310. Stop by 1271 North Davis Road in Salinas, across from Applebee's, or browse to PrunetaRealEstate.com.
Starting in Santa Cruz County, southbound 9 at 236, we have an injury accident. Southbound lane is blocked because of this. Motorcycle down in the roadway, and actually several other motorcycles have actually stopped at the scene. Gilroy Leavesley Road at New Avenue, we have a two-vehicle accident. Both vehicles have been cleared from the roadway onto the right-hand shoulder. Salinas Elkhorn Road at Walker Valley Road, there's a large tree limb in the lanes there. And finally, in Greenfield, southbound 101 before Espinosa Road, reports of a grass fire burning near the roadway. This may be causing a bit of a visual hazard. Fire department is en route to check that out. Highway 17, both directions, checking in, stalling accident free. This report is brought to you by In-N-Out Burger. No microwaves, no freezers, just 100% fresh ingredients cooked to order for quality you can taste. In-N-Out, that's what a hamburger is all about. I'm Diane with traffic on KRXA 540.
Continue now on the Peter B. Collins Show. I remain your humble host, Peter B. And just 1 week ago, my program was coming to you live from the mall in Washington, D.C. at the site of Camp Democracy. It's the continuation of Camp Casey from Crawford, Texas. And a lot of great folks, Velvet Revolution U.S., Democrats.com, Code Pink for Peace. I mean, the list goes on and on. A lot of different organizations have coalesced to form this encampment that continues through the 21st of September. And joining us with a live report from Camp Democracy this evening is Bob Fitrakis. He's the Green Party candidate for governor of Ohio. Hello, Governor.
How's it going?
I'm doing okay, Bob. How about you?
Well, we're doing quite well here. It's been a full day. Actually, they're making popcorn now. We just heard George Shrub, the singing CIA agent, and we're listening to some poets. But it's going to be the world premiere tonight, the first real showing of Dorothy Fadiman's long-awaited a movie on the 04 election in Ohio.
Well, I have heard some advance information about that. In fact, Mark Crispin Miller was on with us earlier this hour, and he's coming to the West Coast for the West Coast premiere of that film in early October.
Good. I actually talked a little to Mark today. He seems to be all over the country. He was in Minneapolis, but it's going great here, and a lot of different groups spend a whole day talking about democracy and reform and making the system transparent.
Well, and I was really pleased to be a part of Camp Democracy, and I just want to be really direct, Bob, that even if you have 10,000 people there today, we need 100,000 people. We need a real strong showing and recognition by Americans that this government cannot stand and that we need serious change this November. And while I'm pleased at the number of people who have come out, I'm also aware of the people who aren't there and who aren't expressing themselves.
No, I couldn't agree with you more. To some extent, it looks like, you know, with 63-64% of the population against the war, 92% in the Zogby poll wanting full transparency in election, the majority of people against torture, is that we've won the battle of public opinion. Now we've got to, you know, take back the government.
Well, that's a very important point, and there's complacency about elections, and on this program we talk about it a lot. I'm very concerned that the Democratic Party is once again going to just pay lip service to election integrity issues and come up losing too often this November.
Well, I mean, one of the reasons I'm running as an independent, it gives me legal status to sue both before and following the election, and the election protection movement, which really put me on the ballot, I think it's not going to happen again unless we do get complacent. But we really need people to adopt local boards of election and really find out who these technicians are. Big news in Washington today in the Washington Post was they covered the Princeton study of computer scientists, noting how easy it is to hack these machines and to put viruses in, and how a few people can swing a whole election.
Yeah. Well, I agree. There is a little bit of traction on a number of issues from progressives, in the corporate media. But it still doesn't represent the kind of groundswell of public opinion and public awareness that I want to see.
Well, a lot of it is you've got to, as the Republican plan to win is to shrink the electorate, whether it be by, electronic polling lists where your name's not on it, or a perfect match on your driver's license, or you need a photo ID to vote, is they realize they're not the majority, they can't win a majority, but on the other hand, the Democrats have got to be able to motivate people to get out and vote, and merely people's distrust and dislike of the Republican Party does not necessarily mean a victory.
Yeah. Now, Bob, let's talk about a couple of developments. Tom Noe, who was running the election commission in Lucas County, which is Toledo, he was convicted earlier this week of money laundering in campaign finance for 2004 for the Bush campaign, and he continues to face charges for his role in the rare coin scam.
Yeah, he's federal charges. He was convicted. He'll do jail time. He's still facing, as you noted, the state charges. And these are very important. And couple this with, the new reports that Ney is probably going to plead and do some jail time, Congressman Tom Ney.
Bob
this
Ney,
entire
yeah.
apparatus is being is coming apart.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And the Bob Ney plea is a little bit surprising because it appeared he was going to, leave his post so that he could defend himself. And it's interesting that he has pled as one of the first members to acknowledge his role in the Abramoff scandal.
Yeah, and, before it's all through, as they peel the onion back, they're going to find that this stuff was systematic. It's money laundering, it's organized crime, and more than anything, some people should be brought up on RICO. I mean, this is a pattern and practice of corrupt activity. And they stole the whole state, they've hijacked the nation.
Yeah. Now, Bob, I grew up in Cincinnati. I am a Buckeye, and it is very discouraging for me to see my homeland operate the way it does. Does Ted Strickland get it, and do you think he has a shot this November?
Well, surprisingly, Ted is up in the polls by about 25 points. We're not even sure that ceiling distance. I think Ken Blackwell's got to get into that 10 to 15 points behind to go for a steal. But In the first debate, Ted Strickland's credit, he mentioned that Blackwell helped make George Bush president in 2000. In fact, Blackwell brags about this on his sites, and so do right-wing Republican sites. They say that, he was their secret weapon in Florida in 2000 because he was Secretary of State in Ohio, and he really helped Catherine Harris in terms of interpreting the law so Bush would win.
Uh-huh.
But when Ted Strickland brought this up, he was attacked by the corporate newspapers, the Columbus Dispatch, for making stuff up. So what is an ongoing battle where Strickland keeps getting bolder on the election issue, and the corporate newspapers that try to spank him in order to keep him in line. But Ted Strickland understands the issues, and I think who really understands this issue is Howard Dean.
Mm-hmm.
And Ted has been getting consistently bolder on talking about reform and wanting Blackwell removed.
Mm-hmm.
The Democratic Party in this state has asked for Blackwell to be removed so he doesn't count the votes in his own election.
Well, that's a step forward. Well, Bob, I want to thank you for joining us, and thank you for participating in Camp Democracy. There's information on the web at campdemocracy.org, and it's not too late for you to make plans to head to Washington, D.C. before the ultimate there on September 21st. Bob Petrakis, thanks for joining us.
All right. Glad to be on the show. Thanks, Pete.
You bet. Coming up next, Brad Friedman from...
Do you have a living trust? Lawyers on Duty is offering a living trust package for just $995. If you're single, only $895. Give your loved ones the safety net by saving them thousands of dollars by avoiding cumbersome legal proceedings. At Lawyers on Duty, they're available and affordable. With over 1,000 living trusts completed locally, they'll work with you to avoid costly probate. Behind Rosine's on Alvarado Street, downtown Monterey. Lawyers on Duty, 375-5100. Alan Kaplan, owner.
Join me, Deborah Lindsay, each Sunday afternoon at 2 for Tomorrow Matters. We'll be matching the global problems of today with the local solutions for a better tomorrow. I'll bring in the guests, and you call with the questions and ideas, and collectively we'll set the standards for a more sustainable future, because for all of us, tomorrow matters. Join me right here on KRXA 540 AM for Tomorrow Matters each Sunday at 2.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Bill Whitney. The health warning has been expanded.
We now have concern not only for bagged spinach, but for any prepackaged ballot items that contain spinach.
Dr. David Acheson of the Food and Drug Administration says the E. coli outbreak that spread to 20 states has been traced back to California-based Natural Selection Foods.
The epidemiology that we got linked the illnesses of those who had consumed spinach, prepackaged spinach, linked it to a number of the brands and names that are made by that particular company, by Natural Selection Foods.
He cautions that other producers might also be implicated. The investigation continues. Health experts theorize that spinach fields were irrigated with water that had been contaminated by cow manure containing E. coli bacteria. Nearly 100 illnesses have been confirmed. One person has died. President Bush says Congress has to decide, does it want the CIA terrorist interrogation program to go forward or not? At a Rose Garden news conference today, Mr. Bush disputed former Secretary of State Colin Powell's argument that the program makes the world doubt the moral basis of our fight against terrorism.
If there's any comparison between the compassion and decency of the American people and the terrorist tactics of extremists, it's flawed logic.
Mr. Bush refuses to meet with Iran's President Ahmadinejad when they're both at the UN next week. He said the United States will come to the table when the Iranians verifiably suspend their uranium enrichment program. The Pentagon revealed today that in addition to the two soldiers killed yesterday by a truck bomb in western Baghdad, a third is missing. Forces from violent Anbar province have been moved into Baghdad to combat the violence there, but Lieutenant General Peter Chiarelli, the coalition commander in Iraq, says he's okay with that.
Forces, but I believe we have the forces that we need in Al-Anbar, understanding that Al-Anbar today is a supporting effort to what we're doing in Baghdad.
Iraq's Interior Ministry says trenches will be dug around Baghdad to keep insurgents and car bombers out. He denied and denied, but today, CBS News correspondent Bob Fuss reports Ohio Congressman Bob Ney agreed to plead guilty to corruption charges.
In a statement, Ney said he's deeply sorry for what he has done and suggests a previously undisclosed addiction to alcohol played a role. In his plea bargain, he admits taking free trips, sports tickets, and restaurant meals from lobbyist Jack Abramoff and doing him favors in Congress in return. He also admitted taking thousands of dollars in cash and gambling chips from a foreign businessman in London and used one of his staffers to help smuggle the cash through customs. He could face up to 10 years in prison, but prosecutors say they'll recommend 2 years and 3 months behind bars.
A good day, Captain. Good week on Wall Street. The Dow Industrial's up 33 points to 11,560. That's a gain of 1.5% for the week. The NASDAQ up nearly 7 points today to 2235. This is CBS News.
Where do you want to be?
I'll bet you a dollar if we look on Remax.com, we'll just find Remax listings.
I bet you're wrong.
Okay, let's see. Remax, somebody else, somebody else.
Looks like all the listings to me.
Why would Remax do that?
To give us consumers what we want.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, way cool.
Just like you.
Yeah, thanks, but you still owe me a dollar.
Find your perfect place. It's easier than ever at Remax.com. Nobody sells more real estate than Remax. Each office independently owned and operated.
It's a fact. The more allergy symptoms you have, the less likely your allergy medicines can help you. But Tylenol Allergy is different. It's the allergy medicine with the pure pain relief of Tylenol. And it relieves more symptoms than even the leading allergy prescription. Stop. Think. Tylenol Allergy. Take only as directed.
Eighty-year-old Cuban leader Fidel Castro, who had intestinal surgery in late July, remains in the shadows as his country hosts a gathering of leaders from around the world. CBS News reporter Adrian Bard is in Havana.
Cuban Foreign Minister Felipe Perez Roque said Fidel Castro could be back. But for now, his brother Raul Castro, Cuba's vice president, is heading the delegation at this gathering of non-aligned nations that includes Iran, Venezuela, and India. The Cuban official did not rule out a possible appearance by Fidel Castro before the meeting ends tomorrow night. Adrian Bard, CBS News, Havana.
Castro told a visitor today that he lost 41 pounds but has gained almost half the weight back. U.S. Commerce Secretary Carlo Gutierrez, a Cuban-American, made a speech in Miami today calling Raul Castro a military dictator and calling for a referendum to let the Cuban people decide whether they want democracy after 47 years of communist rule. I'm Bill Whitney, CBS News.
If you're taking a trip and wanted to go an extra 33,000 miles, would you be better off with a Michelin man driving or with a cabbie?
Where are you going?
Across the country, 11 times.
That'd be about $62,000.
Is that with the air conditioning on or without?
Without.
Well, the Michelin man can beat that hands down. Michelin HydroEdge tires outlast the leading competitor by up to 33,000 miles. So you get more tire for your money. To find a Michelin dealer nearest you, visit MichelinMan.com. Michelin, a better way forward.
The following message brought to you is a public service by Arid Extra Dry.
There's an important election going on right now. It's the election of the executive director of the Wetness Protection Program, and it's critical that you get out and vote today at wetnessprotectionprogram.com, because your vote is a vote against underarm wetness, a vote against odor, a vote for a fresher America. Make sure that your voice is heard, because you and every other American have the right to wetness and odor protection. Visit wetnessprotectionprogram.com.
To fight wetness and odor, just apply Arid Extra Dry.
And we head into the third and final hour of the Peter B. Collins Show today. I remain your humble host, Peter B. And you're welcome to join the conversation whenever the urge strikes you. We provide the number toll-free and pay for the call. It's 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. That's 888-5-PETER-B. And I've noticed by the stream of phone calls and emails that people are back in the groove after their long summer vacations. And so is Brad Friedman, the proprietor of BradBlog.com. He's been driving Miss Desi. all across the country and back this summer. Soon to be a feature film. I can imagine Morgan Freeman playing your part.
He'd be perfect. I can't see anything wrong with that.
Bradness, how are you?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
Not too bad. Are you back home where the Bills are?
Finally back where the Bills are, and boy, there are plenty of them here. I'll tell you, I was gone for on the road for just about 2 months, and apparently back in just the nick of time, because all hell now seems to be breaking loose. Have you noticed?
I sure have. There's all kinds of stuff going on. Let's start off with Bob Ney of Ohio, the Republican congressman who about a month ago said, oh, I'm not going to run for re-election. And yesterday, in today's edition, the New York Times reported that he is going to plead guilty to charges stemming from the Abramoff scandal.
Yes, well, as you know, I've been reporting on Mr. Ney for some time as the soon-to-be-indicted Bob Ney, going back to January, and I guess we call him the now-indicted or the now-convicted. I'm not sure how you phrase that, but yes, he's pled guilty, and he was the at once the head of the House Administrative Committee.
Mm-hmm.
And he was, in fact, the lead sponsor and lead author of the Help America Vote Act. And some time ago, back in January, I wrote an expose about how he was involved with Jack Abramoff and the Diebold lobbyist, voting machine company, Diebold lobbyist, who just happened to have been his former chief of staff. So when folks wonder how the hell we got to this point with these crappy voting machines, electronic voting machines that are now everywhere because of that Help America Vote Act this year, it all goes back to Bob Ney and his buddies at Abramoff's Greenberg Traurig and his old buddy who was his chief of staff, who pushed this thing through Congress. And ever since that was passed in 2002, Bob Ney has stopped every single attempt to change that bill to require paper ballots and everything else. So you can imagine I had no sadness today to see that Bob Ney was finally copping to at least to a little bit of this, and we'll see how many months he ends up getting. I think I've heard something like 27 months.
Mm-hmm. Maybe he can bunk with Duke Cunningham.
With Thomas No, up in Ohio there,
right.
Bush's number one funder during the 2004 campaign.
Yeah, we just had Bob Petraeus on from Camp Democracy right before you joined us, and we were talking about Noe's conviction on the money laundering charge, and of course he still faces charges for a scam involving rare coins and state funds that were lost when they were invested in Noe's accounts. But I want to come back to Bob Ney for a second, because I'm reading at Brad Blog right now, and your post included an item I didn't know about. He's going Betty Ford on us.
Yes, wasn't that interesting? Yeah, it looks like he has checked himself into an alcohol rehabilitation place, so it was questionable whether he'd be able to make one of the hearings, I think, today. But yes, he has alcohol problems, so I suppose we should feel bad for him.
Well, and he's too lucky, too. You point out that he had some really big luck, a $34,000 win at a casino in London, and it turns out that's the exact amount of money he needed to pay off his credit card bills?
Yes, exactly right. And this was on a junket that he was brought out to London, and I've already forgotten, I think it was 2003, if I'm recalling, where he had, yeah, he had exactly that amount in credit card debt. And what do you know, the owners of this casino happened to be good friends with the lobbyists from Iran, by the way, of all places, who had invited him out to London to have these meetings. These Iranian businessmen were trying to lobby Bob Ney to allow to lift the restrictions on selling airplane parts to Iran. So he went out there, he met with them, he went back, I think, on another trip and went to their good friend's casino with one of the biggest gamblers in all of London, and struck it big. I think it was two hands of two-card poker. And on the second card hand, he somehow managed to win $34,000 the exact same amount that he owed on his credit card.
I've done a little gambling at casinos in London and never came away with a dime or a pound.
Well, I guess you don't know the right people, Peter. What can I tell you?
Now, Brad, here you go connecting more of the dots. You point out that with Tom DeLay's indictment in Texas, and by the way, an appeals court reinstated a conspiracy charge that had been previously dismissed, so he's got more music to face. And you point out that the last of the junketeers, the congressman who went to St. Andrews, Scotland on Jack Abramoff's dime, the last to face criminal charges is Tom Feeney. And he popped up in our soap opera last week. He's the guy who Clint Curtis has taken on in Florida after Feeney asked Clint Curtis years ago to help him develop software that could be used to steal elections.
That's right. And in case folks weren't following that, Tom DeLay went on this golf junket to St. Andrews, Scotland in 2000. And, of course, he's indicted in Texas. Bob Ney went in 2002, and so the only one yet to face criminal charges is Tom Feeney. And as I know you've had Clint Curtis on your show, some extraordinary claims that he asked him to create vote rigging software. Right now, Feeney has been the one. He has flown beneath the radar in all of these Republican scandals now for a long time. And I got to tell you, you know, I've been reporting on him and Clint Curtis' story for about 2 years. And this guy is about as dirty as they come from everything I can tell, from everything that I have seen. Not to mention, not a nice guy.
Yeah.
He has gone on a smear campaign against Clint Curtis. He refuses to answer the charges other than to attempt to marginalize Curtis by calling him. He put out a press release the day after the actually the night of, 2:30 a.m., a press release calling Clint Curtis the craziest man in America. But what was even more bizarre was in the days prior to the primary election that Clint Curtis won handily over his opponent. Just in the days prior, he put out this brochure comparing Feeney to Curtis, didn't even take into mind Curtis's primary opponent, painted Curtis actually very nicely, and I'm told, I'm trying to look into this, Peter, but I'm told that he actually made robocalls in favor of Clint Curtis prior to the election.
Well, Rick Santorum is supporting the Green Party candidate in the Senate race in Pennsylvania. People will do whatever it takes to try to get their opponent to lose.
Well, I guess so, but this was a call in favor of Curtis, and he's running directly against him. I understand why Santorum is doing it. Figures if he can get the Green guy going, then it's going to take away votes from Santorum's real Democratic opponent. But this is Feeney's direct opponent, and I'll tell you, it really takes a twisted mind. This fella has raised more than $1.1 million, Tom Feeney, for this campaign. I'm told he has already spent about $750,000 of it. No doubt some of it went to that brochure, to those robocalls, and I'm told a 100-page book detailing just how crazy Clint Curtis is as Tom Feeney, and in the as Tom Feeney believes it. And in the bargain, I'm told, he smears me, your good Brad blogger, for some reason.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to seeing that. He smears me. He smears any newspaper or magazine who has ever reported on Clint Curtis's story, according to one of those newspapers that received a copy of this. So far, they haven't seen fit to send me one, but I'd love to see what they have to say about me.
Yeah. All right, Brad, we're going to take a break and return. If you have a question or comment for Brad Friedman from bradblog.com, he's with us this hour, and you can call me toll-free at 888-5-PETER-B. That's 888-573-8372, 888-5-PETER-B. We'll continue in just a moment here on the Peter B. Collins Show. KRXA 540, Progressive Talk for Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry in Monterey for 33 years. and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place long before you open your mouth. Dr. Turner interviews every new patient so that he'll understand what is important to you. And because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Sally, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 831-375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street, downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. So for all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens. He cares.
Monta Vista Wine and Spirits in Monterey is family-owned for more than 40 years. That's why when you walk in, you're treated so well. They know what they're doing. Excellent service and great product. They have the best in high-end liquor and an excellent selection of the finest wines. It's the real deal. At Monta Vista Wine and Spirits, you can call ahead and your order will be waiting for you. They treat you like family. Open every day 9 to 9 at 19 Soledad Drive in Monta Vista Village. Monta Vista Wine and Spirits ask you to please drink responsibly.
Let the touch of an angel make your next wedding, anniversary, birthday, or family celebration extra special. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe, located at 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside, just across from Craig and Auto Parts, offering full bakery, deli, and cafe services. In the mood for delicious Italian pastries and cookies, specially brewed Latin American coffee, or traditional espresso drinks? Come to Angelina's, where you'll find palate-teasing cheesecakes and specialty cakes for all occasions, as well as tarts and pies with a wide assortment of seasonal flavors. Angelina's Deli features fresh deli sandwiches, breakfast sandwiches, and breakfast burritos. Try Angelina's specialty Mexican and Salvadoran dishes. They're simply delicious. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe. Open 7 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Sundays, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Treat yourself to the best, where the old world meets the new in a friendly, clean, casual atmosphere. Visit Angelina's today, 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside.
Hey, it's Sheila Gale from Reality Radio with Jack Page.
Hey, wow, Sheila, I'm so excited about our show.
Our show?
Reality Radio.
Oh, my show.
Hey, we'll be talking about things that really matter in life. Day-to-day struggles, our children, money.
Aging, our fears, anger, and all with a touch of humor.
We'll take your calls and have the Central Coast's most colorful guests.
Every Saturday afternoon, 4 to 5.
Reality Radio with the amazing Sheila Gale.
And the hilarious Jack Page on AM 540 KRXA.
Love it.
But we do have a new accident coming through for Carmel. It's Highway 1 at Carpenter Street. Two vehicles involved in this. One is in the center divide and one is on the right-hand shoulder. So CHP will need to perform a traffic break to clear that vehicle from the center divide. In Salinas, Elkhorn Road at Walker Valley Road. Keep your eyes open for a large tree limb in the lanes there. Watsonville Highway 129 at Old Chittenden Road. We have a stalled vehicle. It's actually stalled out on some railroad tracks, so CHP en route to check that out. Also, keep your eyes open in Gilroy, northbound 101 at Maston Avenue. A chair in the middle lane. Both directions of Highway 17 through the Santa Cruz Mounds. Checking in, stall and accident free. This report is brought to you by Mattress Discounters. During Mattress Discounters' free box spring sale, purchase any select Sealy or Simmons mattress at their everyday low price and get the matching box spring absolutely free. Mattress Discounters. I'm Diane with traffic on KRXA 540.
And the Peter B. Collins Show rolls on. It's 21 minutes after the hour. We continue our Friday soiree with Brad Friedman from BradBlog.com. And Brad, a caller who couldn't stay on the line, asked the question. This is Steve in Salinas. Is it too late for Congress to pass legislation to require paper ballots, paper trail? And I think he's implying for this November's election.
Well, I think it's certainly too late to do any substantive legislation at this point. I think there's about 10 more legislative days. However, with so much that's going on, I had been meaning to touch base with a few folks in Congress and said, look, with everything going on, can you pass a simple one-line piece of legislation, even if it's just for this November, that requires all jurisdictions to have paper ballots as an option for people to use. even if they're optical scan ballots or something like that, because, you know, as I'm sure we're going to talk about here shortly, we have just got an absolute disaster on our hands, and, you know, I'd suggest some sort of emergency legislation at this point is appropriate. I think it's too late in the game, most likely, certainly too late in the game to pass anything, you know, any new requirements on these machines as far as, you know, requiring them to have paper trails or even better paper ballots, because in each location there's a lot of testing that has to occur and certification and so forth. Now, not that anybody's really doing any testing or any actual certification of these things, as a story I broke this morning discusses, but it is a process for these jurisdictions to change their the way they're doing things, and with the time that we have left between now and November, they're going to have their work cut out for them, just figuring out how to use the terrible waste of money equipment that they purchased between now and November.
And you sent out an email this afternoon regarding Colorado. And there are some people there suggesting that voters ask for absentee ballots. But we've been over this before. That is not an assurance that your vote can't be manipulated or otherwise stolen during the counting process of absentee ballots.
That's right. And arguably, it's perhaps even more dangerous in many ways to use absentee ballots, depending on what your other options are, because those absentee ballots in general are scanned right into the system without the safeguards that actually exist on some of the regular op-scan systems. The absentee ballots, if you're in a Diebold jurisdiction, pretty much go straight into the GEMS system. Now, if you have the option during the day to go to the polls to use a paper ballot that will be scanned, at least there's an additional level of reporting that goes on throughout the day, so you can track you know, how these ballots are coming in. As well, if you're going to mail in your absentee ballot, a lot of these things get lost in the mail. So what I would recommend for folks, if you've only got one option at your polling place, which is to use a touchscreen voting system, I would say don't do it. Get an absentee ballot, but rather than mail them in, actually bring them into your polling place on election day if you're allowed to do so. That way you can assure that it gets there. Worst case scenario, fill out an absentee ballot, make a Xerox copy of it, and send it certified mail back to the registrar's office. That's the mess we're in right now, Peter.
Now, Brad, we're in the season of the final primary elections before the November general. And virtually every election day, we have another train wreck. And this week, it was Maryland's turn.
Yeah, it was really bad in Maryland. Of course, you know, in many ways, it wasn't much worse than a lot of the other states. I think the difference here is that the media happens to be in Maryland, the media and the politicians. Montgomery County in particular is where many of the you know, the Congress members and the Washington media actually live, so they got to see firsthand what a disaster we have going here. Now remember, Maryland has been using Diebold since 2002. They were one of Diebold's original showcase states, so you'd think they would have it down by now, but no, apparently they don't. Machines failed to start up. They froze throughout the day. The election directors forgot to send out the voter access cards, which are needed to start up these machines in the first place.
And when the local, you know, precinct officials didn't know when those cards were coming, they turned away some voters and allowed others to use provisional ballots.
Well, that's right. And not only that, they used provisional ballots, which means those ballots, the provisionals, are not counted until Monday of next week. If they are counted at all. What they should have had was emergency paper ballots that would definitely be counted the day of. So those folks who, if they did stick around, if they were allowed to vote on provisional ballots, may never have their votes counted at all. On top of that, Maryland added these, as if things weren't bad enough, Maryland added Diebold's brand spanking new electronic voting electronic registration books.
Yeah, I heard about that.
Poll books, which the poll workers had no clue, apparently, how to use. They kept breaking down. They were not in sync. I mean, it was just a complete and utter meltdown. And I'll remind you that this is a primary election in a midterm year.
Right.
So, you know, the turnout was very low. Imagine what it's going to be like for the general in November. Imagine what it's going to be like for the general 2 years from now in 2008.
And, Brad, in our next segment, I want to give you plenty of time to detail the Princeton hack test. We'll get to that coming up shortly. Ed's on the line from Aptos. Good afternoon, Ed. You're on the air.
I was going to kind of lead into that. I was wondering what Brad felt about the USA Today finally catching up or trying to catch up to him.
Well, we'll talk about that in the next segment.
Okay, cool.
Mm-hmm.
The as far as legislation, if we're Terry Schiavo, we'd have it in a heartbeat. I'll leave you with that. Keep up the good work, Brad.
Hey, I appreciate that, Ed.
Bye-bye.
I'll give you a quick point, unless you got to get right to the break.
20 seconds. Go ahead.
USA Today has finally been catching up over the last 2 days. I don't think they've reported on the Princeton report yet, but they have reported on state after state having meltdowns on the front page. That's good news.
We'll pick up there as we continue after the break with Brad Friedman. Visit bradblog.com, and I hope it's not your first time. A lot of powerful information there. You can call this program toll-free at 888-5-PETER-B. That's 888-573-8372. And you can email me, Peter, at peterbcollins.com.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Children's books, educational toys, and games your entire family will enjoy together are always in season at locally owned and operated Thinker Toys. Hi, this is Nurse Rona of Childhood Matters. Research and common sense show that children learn by playing, and the caring management and staff at Thinker Toys have 37 years of experience helping parents and grandparents choose the ideal gift for toddlers through teens. So whether you're birthday shopping or simply want to show your love, a gift from Thinker Toys is a way to let someone know you care enough to shop for the very best. With an outstanding selection of Thomas the Tank engines and tracks, puzzles, board games, and children's books, all very reasonably priced, you can't go wrong with a gift from Thinker Toys. So stop by the beautiful Carmel store at 7th and San Carlos, or the just renovated Del Monte Center in Monterey. Thinker Toys is open daily.
Attention all KRXA listeners. Are you worried about not having enough money for a truly comfortable retirement? Were you aware that you've had the ability to buy real estate within your individual retirement account without government penalty since 1974? Bet you didn't know that. Only 2% of the U.S. population is even aware of the law. If your IRA had been invested in California real estate 20 years ago, you'd be a multimillionaire today. The retirement specialist will show you how to purchase California property right inside your IRA. They've helped nearly 10,000 people in the last four decades achieve their retirement goals by rolling over their IRAs and 401ks into profitable California real estate. Give them a call at 831-794-8485 to learn more about this underutilized retirement investment. That's 831-794-8485. If you want to achieve financial independence by the time you retire, then call now. There's nothing to lose, only valuable knowledge to gain. Call 831-794-8485 and ask for the retirement specialist.
Hi, I'm Scott Dick, host of the Tasty Planet radio show. Every Saturday from 1 to 3 p.m., I explore the world of food, wine, and travel across the U.S. and around the world. I interview nationally known writers, winemakers, chefs, restaurateurs, brewers, and others that make our world so delicious. Join me and my guests every Saturday from 1 to 3 p.m. for tasty news shows, or visit the Tasty Planet on the web by going to www.tastyplanet.org. Listen in and have a good appetite.
Pacific Grove Liquors at 229 Grand Avenue is your one stop on the Monterey Peninsula for fine wines, liquors, and beers at very reasonable prices. Let PG Liquors knowledgeable owner J.R. Medina and his son-in-law Chad help you choose the ideal Monterey regional or imported wine for any occasion, from an intimate dinner with that special someone to a formal affair with dozens or even hundreds of guests. If you're looking for distilled spirits, PG Liquors specializes in the finest blue agave tequilas, single malt and blended scotches, and top-shelf vodkas, including Northern California's own Hangar One. Beer lovers from Carmel to Marina, beat a path to PG Liquors, which boasts hundreds of handcrafted ales, lagers, stouts, porters, as well as all the big names. Make Pacific Grove Liquors at 229 Grand, just above Lighthouse, the outlet for all of your beverage needs.
PG Liquors reminds you to always drink responsibly.
Hi there, KRXA listeners. This is Katie Couric. CBS News and I are so excited that 5:40 a.m. will be airing my notebook every weekday at 6:04 p.m. I'll be sharing my thoughts about politics, culture, and life in general with Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz right here on KRXA 5:40 a.m. So join me, Katie Couric, for Katie's Notebook right after the Peter B. Collins Show and CBS News at 6:04 in the evening from Monday through Friday on KRXA 5:40 a.m.
And the Peter B. Collins Show continues. I continue to be your humble host, Peter B. Collins. We're spending the hour with Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. Topic A is election protection. And if you have a question or comment, join us toll-free at 888-5-PETER-B. That's 888-5-PETER-B. Now, earlier this week, we got news that some folks at Princeton University had successfully hacked into an electronic voting machine and planted malicious code in a remarkably easy process and a very short period of time. And, Brad, I wanted to give you a few minutes here to describe how this was accomplished. And let's start first and foremost with where they got this electronic voting machine to work on.
Well, I'm going to hold back a few details because I'm going to be covering this in a report, hopefully over at Salon this week. But I will tell you that it came from a source of mine, one of the sources I've been reporting on for some time over at BradBlog, who had access to this to this system. And the source essentially gave it to Velvet Revolution and said, hey, guys, do with it as you like. If you can find somebody who wants to take a look at this, please do. This happened a full 9 months ago, and it's been very quiet since then. I think, well, you know, I respect sources and top-secret projects, but I knew this was in the work for about 9 months when we initially gave it over to Avi Rubin, actually, Johns Hopkins University professor. He and his team had hoped to look at it. They were unable to after a few months, so they passed it over to the folks at Princeton, who then spent about 4 months going over it in what is a first-of-its-kind report, where they finally got a chance to look at the hardware, the software, the firmware, the entire system of one of these Diebold touchscreen voting machines.
Now, just a quick question. Yeah. If I logged on to Diebold.com, can I order up my own, you know, touchscreen machine and, you know, just have it sleep over at my house all the time?
Well, you know, that's a very good question. I don't know if there's anything illegal about it. I just don't know if they would sell you one, but it's a great question. I don't know that anyone's ever tried, but if you do it, I promise we'll come up with the money to pay for it.
Okay, well, I'll try. I'll order it and put it on my credit card.
Well, tell them you'd like one. Why not? what we've learned about it, and basically what I'll talk about in this story next week, is that Diebold had absolutely no inventory control whatsoever for these systems. There could be dozens of them out there. There could be hundreds of them out there, for all we know. in the hands of the bad guys, practicing any kind of hacking that they want to do. Basically, they rushed these systems out back in 2002 and 2004 after the Help America Vote Act was passed. And, you know, the idea was to get them out there as quickly as possible, to get as much money as they could from that $3.8 billion of federal HAVA money that was being made available. And, you know, as my source tells me, you know, they didn't give a damn about security. They didn't give a damn about inventory control. It was all about getting these contracts and then letting, you know, hoping nobody noticed. And, well, as it turns out, people have noticed. But it's taken about, what, 2-4 years now for people to notice. I've been on it for a while. But, you know, even the mainstream media is still late in coming to this. Your caller just before the bottom of the hour had talked about the fact that USA Today had finally jumped into this thing. And they detailed in a quick report, but they detailed all of the meltdowns that have been occurring in all of the states that have used these machines since the beginning of primary season back March 7th in Texas. And I think you and I have been talking pretty much every week, perhaps boring your listeners to death with state by state as these primaries went on, and as you know, predictably each week something would go terribly wrong.
Well, Brad, I have no indication of listener fatigue, and if you are tired of hearing about these issues, email me and let me know. But I have no indication that people don't think this is really important.
Well, it absolutely is. You are to be congratulated for noticing that right away, and you know, now I'm glad to see everyone else jumping into the game. But the fact of the matter is, you ask, or one of your callers asks, you know, what can be done between now and November? The truth is, not a heck of a lot.
Yeah,
that's the problem.
Now let's come back to Princeton, and what do they actually do, and what does it show us?
Well, what they found, having the time to look at this machine and throw everything, you know, they could at it, that it takes about 2 minutes time to implant a virus onto the system that can flip the votes of the voters without the voter noticing. This would be after they've already confirmed it, after they said it was, you know, it looked good and they cast their vote. It can change their vote. It can change the votes across the system when the virus itself can then be transferred from one machine to the next via the memory card. And all it takes is a minute or two time with unsupervised access to the voting machines, to a single voting machine, or a single memory card. Which brings us back to, I know, what you and I have been talking about for the last few months, that case down in San Diego,
yep.
The old Busby Bilbray case and the sleepovers. And this is one of the reasons why I was trying to point out how damned important it was to keep the security on these systems and to not allow them to go out into poll workers' hands for days and weeks at a time, as they did in these sleepovers, because Princeton has now shown what, you know, people have felt for a long time that it would be easy to implant a virus on these systems, but now, in fact, it has been done, and the Princeton report is great. It gives a videotape demonstration that I think is easy enough for anybody to understand, and it shows how a presidential election between George Washington and Benedict Arnold could easily be flipped. The voters would never know, the election officials would never know, and the virus would essentially delete its own tracks, so it would never be found after the election.
That's amazing. Now, you were kind enough and fair enough and balanced enough to post on Bradblog the official reaction from Diebold, and I'll summarize it in two areas. One is they say that the AccuVote TS unit that was used at Princeton has security software, that is two generations old and to Diebold's knowledge is not used anywhere in the country. Is that a significant refutation?
No. And I'll tell you a couple of reasons why. I find it interesting that turn of phrase, to our knowledge, it's not being used. I mean, it is their job to know what is being used and what isn't being used. So the fact that they would say, to our knowledge, no one is using this software, this particular software, is kind of mind-blowing. But it's a very disingenuous response from Diebold. For one thing, the Princeton Report points out that some of the problems that they found could be fixed with changes to the software, but others are inherent in the hardware itself. So unless you replace the entire system and or the motherboard for the system, it simply can't be fixed. So, furthermore, with the findings of Princeton, also will apply to the newer machines, the Diebold TSX machines, like the type used in California in various counties.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a very disingenuous reply from Diebold. One of the things that I noted right away in that reply was that they said, well, you can't pass a virus from one machine to the next because these machines are never networked. Well, that is also in many ways untrue, but let's give them the benefit of the doubt that they are not networked. The report itself shows how the memory cards themselves, these are the cards that are in the machines that actually tabulate the votes, store the vote count. Those cards, in many jurisdictions, if not all jurisdictions, are taken out of the machine at the end of the day and put into what's called an aggregator machine at the jurisdiction, and they basically add up all of the memory cards into a single aggregator machine. Well, once you move that memory card that has a virus on it to any other machine, that machine is now infected as well, and that could potentially go all the way back to the county level, to the main, to the central tabulator system.
Now let me read you this from the Diebold response. The current generation AccuVote TSS software that is used today on AccuVote TS units in the United States has the most advanced security features, including advanced encryption standard 128-bit data encryption, digital signed memory card data, secure socket layer SSL data encryption for transmitted results, dynamic passwords, and more.
Yeah, well, sounds good, doesn't it?
Hold on.
I've got a response to this entire Diebold response from computer scientist Douglas Jones from the University of Iowa, who's been studying these voting machines and all of these problems for quite some time. And his response, quite simply, to that paragraph is that Diebold has not released to the public sufficient information to allow an assessment of the competence with which these measures were applied. In other words, they're not giving anybody information. There have been many reports in the past, but many of them have been redacted or kept private. And so we simply don't know. Are they telling the truth? Don't know. I mean, it's incredible that this many years into the game, it takes a jerk like me to help a scientist, an independent scientist, get one of these machines so that they can do an independent study, an independent hack test, and determine what can and can't be done. Diebold doesn't tell anybody what's done, and when there are tests by independent organizations that are done, they fight like hell to keep them redacted and out of the public. So we have no idea. This goes back to transparency.
Right.
Finally, let me, if I have one moment,
yep,
to touch base with what we talked about in the last hour concerning Colorado. The other thing that was found in Colorado was that the guy who was appointed out there to certify these voting systems, and in Colorado they use Diebold, ESNS, Hardin or Civic, Sequoia, they use the whole panoply of them. He admitted in a deposition in a lawsuit which is trying to ban these machines in Colorado that he has absolutely no college training in computer science, and that he didn't, this is the fellow who is responsible for certifying the machines for the state of Colorado.
Great.
He has no college education in computer science, and in fact, his testing didn't include anything more than checking the machines to make sure they included their documentation.
And did we investigate to see if he caddied for Bob Ney and Abramoff at the golf course in Scotland?
Not yet, but I'm working on it, Peter.
All right, and I hired a professional announcer with a British accent to read the rest of the Diebold statement. Here it is.
Features, daily programmable storage for 120 programs, automatic tuning, programmable split key, storage rate, split combinations, transpositions, balance, and split rotations, storage rate, double combinations, transpositions, and balance, contain space built in, selectable Diebold, four-ball filter, polyphonic ornamental, and polyphonic. Unit transfers of call, use and call teaching. Two oscillators per voice, two full ADSRM blow generators per voice, pitching modulation levers, assignment for either half or split, independent modulation LFO with sine or sawtooth waveforms, front foot control, controlled building, parameter sustained, program advanced, noise generator, 115 to 130 volt power switch. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. We'll continue in just a moment with his Bradness. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. There's room for your call. Toll free, 888-5-PETER-B. That's 888-573-8372. And I'm still Peter B. Collins. You're listening to KRXA 540.
United States, you have many rights. You have the right to assemble. You have the right to free speech. You have the right to worship as you choose. And when you disagree with Billy Sunshine, you have the right to be wrong.
The Billy Sunshine Show, right here on KRXA 540 AM. Coming soon, Sundays 3 to 5.
Doing business in Santa Cruz County since 1950, Wilson's Tire and Service now has three locations to serve you better wherever you live. All three locations feature full service, friendly, fast, same-day service, or, in the words of hands-on owner Juan Escamilla,
we're fast and fair, and service is job one at Wilson's Tire and Service.
Specializing in tire, brake, and alignment services with state-of-the-art equipment. Looking for friendly, fast, same-day service from experienced pros? Come to Wilson's Tire and Service. Now located in Santa Cruz at 1807 Soquel Avenue across from Walgreens, in Soquel Village at Old San Jose Road and Soquel Drive, and now in Aptos Village across the entrance to Nicene Mark State Park. Questions? Call 476-0370. That's 476-0370. Say hello to Juan and get the Wilson's Tire and Service full service.
We do have a couple accidents coming through for Santa Cruz. Southbound 1 before Morrissey Boulevard, a three-vehicle accident there. In Santa Cruz, northbound 1 at Highway 17, we have a two-vehicle accident in the second lane from the left. Also a two-vehicle accident in Gilroy, southbound 101 at Monterey Road. Two vehicles are being cleared over to the right-hand shoulder as we speak. In Gilroy, northbound 101 at Maston Avenue, keep your eyes open for a chair in the middle lane. In Monterey, Monholland Road, west of Jack's Peak Road, a fire burning and fire department actually has the road shut down there. This report is brought to you by your San Jose area Land Rover Retail Center. The LR3 by Land Rover with advanced safety and performance features, seating for 7 adults and a host of luxurious amenities. You'll always have the confidence to say, let's take mine. Visit your Bay Area Land Rover Retail Center today. I'm Diane with traffic on KRXA 540.
Do it.
And the Peter B. Collins Show continues on this Friday afternoon. I'm ready for a nice, restful weekend. Hope you are, too. We continue with Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. And we're joined by Marianne from Pacific Grove. Hello, Marianne. You're on the air.
Good afternoon, Peter. If you have time for two quotes, fine. If not, I'll call you.
Oh, you go ahead. You've been on hold for too long already.
Oh, I love being on hold. I get to listen to you.
Okay.
Yeah, it's about the election thing, and I want to quote Gore Vidal, whom I heard speak long time ago. He had run for Senate and lost.
Yes, he did.
And he said running for public office is a soul killer, which I thought was a very good statement. And it occurs to me that Miss Busby thought she had that election in the bag because of the Cunningham thing, and she maybe didn't build a strong enough campaign or get enough money or whatever. But when you interviewed her, what I heard was exhaustion.
Yeah.
Absolute exhaustion.
Well, it was a defeatist attitude. And, it's one thing for her to arrive at that, and, I respect her right to be defeated. But, the rest of us are counting on her and, to some extent, the Democratic Party to properly make sure that all votes are counted and that such an election is legitimate.
Yeah, but she didn't know that, you know, this election fraud thing was barely churning up when she was running.
Let me respond to that.
Yeah, go ahead.
I can give her a certain amount of leeway in that she may not have known beforehand, but I was reporting what happened and the problem with the sleepovers as of, I think it was either that night of election or the very next day, June 7th. I made call after call, email after email, promising them that I would keep the conversation off record if they would only call back. All I wanted to do was to make sure that Francine understood what happened here and what was at stake. And they never called back.
I'm not surprised.
Move down the line about a month, I finally did get a meeting with her in San Diego during Democracy Fest, explained to her exactly what happened. She said she had been reading the Brad blog, and yet she still didn't come out at that time. So at what point do you stop giving that leeway? I mean, this is someone who wants to be an elected leader for San Diego County.
Well, and what came out for me in my interview with her, Brad and Marianne, was that she seems naive about what's going to happen this November. And it's not limited to the voting process or voting machines, but it has to do with the $5 million they dumped in against her with really nasty ads, and then they seized on an out-of-context remark and plastered it all over television in the final week of the campaign. They flew in over 100 very skilled Republicans from Washington to get out the vote and maybe suppress the vote on the other side. And she seems very naive to me that all she's got to do is be a strong candidate and she's going to win this November.
Well, I agree with that, except I don't think she had the money or the muscle behind her. She just had one issue.
Well, but hey, she's a person with a voice, and she had standing, and if she called a news conference, the TV stations and the newspapers from San Diego would most likely be there. Her silence, in my view, cannot be countenanced.
Yeah, and I hope another candidate shows up, because I think this woman is just too tired.
Okay. Marianne, your other point?
Other point, it's a quote from my old friend Mae Bressel, and it's not about election fraud, and pardon me for bringing it up, this clown who confessed to JonBenet.
Okay.
And May always, always said, look for mobility and money. And this guy was all over the place. He couldn't keep a job, but he's driving a DeLorean, has a Ferrari in the garage, nips off to Thailand. And I would like to know who's paying his lawyer, who was his lawyer in Colorado and is his lawyer in California, it seems.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he was told, just shut up about this JonBenet thing until we're ready for you, and we'll get you off.
Well, I don't know. I just feel the media owes us a big apology for pretending that this guy had something to do with JonBenet when the evidence was very clear from the start that he's a sicko who was trying to glom on to the case, probably to get the business class ride back from Thailand and avoid criminal charges over there. But beyond
I think he was there to eat up the headlines, because there were I forget which issue was right behind him in the news that just got shoved out of the way.
Well, I'm not so sure Karl Rove has that much power,
yeah.
But it is an unusual coincidence.
I'd like to know who's paying his lawyer.
Okay. Thanks, Marianne.
That's all I got.
All right. And we've got Dave Berman from Eureka. Hello, Dave. You're on the air with Peter B. and Brad.
Hey, Peter and Brad.
Hi.
Listen, Dave. On Monday night, the Palo Alto City Council is going to be considering adopting the voter confidence resolution. This is a variation on the resolution that was adopted in Arcata in July of 2005. And this is all about no basis for confidence. Current election conditions ensure inconclusive outcomes, and having events that pretend to be elections under these conditions, it is not seeking the consent of the governed.
And so what does the resolution say, Dave?
Well, in the resolution, there's also a platform of election reforms that are put forth, basically to say if we made all of these changes, then we could have conclusive outcomes, we could have a basis for confidence. And as we're trying to encourage other communities to adopt this resolution, that part is kind of meant for, you know, local debate and to raise awareness. And it's the whole thing is basically a template. And the parts that I said to you first about no basis for confidence, guaranteed inconclusive results, and the consent of the governed, that's like the framework of it. That's what we want to really propagate. We want to be raising the question, has the consent of the governed been withdrawn yet? Like, it's inevitable.
That's interesting. Brad, go ahead.
The work that they're, let me say first, Dave Berman is a hero up there. He's been fighting tirelessly for this stuff up in Humboldt County. So thank you, Dave, for everything that you're doing for democracy in this country. But he's absolutely right. We've gotten ourselves into this position where election results are announced on election night, and there's absolutely no way that the people or the press should have any confidence in them. And in fact, the bottom line is, not only should we not have confidence in them, what we have learned in many of these cases is they simply cannot be proven. As we saw in Busby Bilbray. So until, you know, there is transparency, until we can see how our votes are actually being counted, and, you know, 92% of America agrees that should be the case, according to a recent Zogby poll. Until that happens, David is right. There is no basis for confidence in these elections, and candidates need to stop conceding, and for that matter, declaring victory in these things until every vote is counted, Republican, Democrat, Green, Libertarian, Independent, I don't care. Our democracy is that precious, and it should be counted.
Dave, is there a website where people can find this resolution?
The resolution can definitely be found through wedonotconsent.blogspot.com.
All right, Dave. Thanks for checking in today. Great to hear from you. Brad, we're glad to back you, have you back on the left coast, and we'll talk to you again next Friday.
Glad to be here. Check Brad Blog, 3 to 5 p.m. I'm hosting an event with Gore Vidal, Deborah Bowen, and Maxine Waters tomorrow, Saturday, in Los Angeles.
All right. Do well. Thank you, Brad.
Thank you, sir.
Pacific Grove Liquors is the one stop on the Monterey Peninsula for fine wine, spirits, and beers at very reasonable prices. Whether you seek the ideal California or imported wine, quality distilled spirits like top shelf tequilas, single malt and blended scotches, and premium vodkas, PG Liquors is your beverage outlet. Love beer? PG Liquors boasts hundreds of handcrafted ales and lagers, as well as all the big names. Make Pacific Grove Liquors at 229 Grand your wine, beer, and liquor store.
PG Liquors reminds you to always drink responsibly.
Tom Hartman.
We have given our electoral process, the franchise by which democracy happens, the most vital part of the commons by which we administer the commons, we have privatized it. We have turned it over to private for-profit corporations.
It's the Tom Hartman program.
And they have no damn business telling us how we voted.
The new Radio Free America, Tom Hartman. Weekday mornings, 10 to noon on KRXA 540.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Bill Whitney. The E. coli outbreak linked to bagged spinach has now been linked to a major producer based in California. Natural Selection Foods, the nation's largest seller of organic produce, has agreed to recall all of its products containing spinach. Federal health officials say their investigation continues and other producers might also be involved. CBS News correspondent John Blackstone is on the story.
California grows 70% of the country's spinach. Most of that comes from the rich Salinas Valley, says farmer Chris Bunn.
You're talking about the salad bowl for the rest of the nation for this time of year. There's very little homegrown left now on the East Coast.
Well, farmers here say they don't want anyone getting sick from their produce. The local Farm Bureau says the government advice not to eat any bagged spinach seems too broad.
In fact, the warning's been broadened to include all bagged salads with spinach. The outbreak now affects nearly 20 states, with 94 illnesses confirmed and one death in Wisconsin. In Oregon, Gwen Wellborn got sick and nearly died.
Honestly, I don't even know how to explain how scary it was.
She says she might never eat salad again. Frustrated by a challenge from three powerful Senate Republicans, President Bush launched a counteroffensive at a news conference today. CBS News correspondent Peter Mayer reports.
Confronting a Republican rebellion, the president's urging senators to see it his way on a strategy to question and try terror suspects.
Time's running out. Congress is set to adjourn in just a few weeks. Congress needs to act wisely and promptly.
The president promises to work with Congress on the high-stakes issue, but the real negotiating is with Republicans, who worry that the president's proposal to redefine Geneva Convention rules on prisoner treatment could jeopardize U.S. troops. Peter Mayer, CBS News, The White House.
Mexico's Baja California Peninsula must have a target on it. For the second time this month, it's in the path of a hurricane, and Hurricane Lane has strengthened rapidly from a Category 1 to a Category 2 storm.
As it stands, it's located about 40 miles west-northwest of Cabo Corrientes, Mexico. That's along the west coast there, about 280 miles southeast of Cabo San Lucas.
Navy Lieutenant Dave Roberts is a forecaster at the National Hurricane Center. Torrential rain from Lane has flooded communities along Mexico's Pacific coast, causing a landslide that killed a 7-year-old boy. Hurricane John, 2 weeks ago, was blamed for 5 deaths. Priests of the Philadelphia